I don't like to talk over Gwen Stefani. I just don't. But welcome to another Sunday morning. It's me, Wendy Snyder. And how is everybody doing? I have to tell you, this first segment, I think we should do a little behind the scenes thing because there was so much show material that was happening when I walked in. First of all, Schwani's here. Hi, Dave Schwan.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
I was, all right, with you, I heard that you were on with Dave Plyer talking about Route 66.
Friday, we were on with Dave, yep, talking about Route 66. You could call it the Mother Road, America's Main Street,
yeah.
A number of things, yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that today because I grew up in Brookfield, and Route 66 is part of Ogden Avenue, and it was very close to where I grew up, and I've been on Ogden Avenue for, oh my God, I could tell you all the food places I've been to there. Mr. Taco, Henry's Hot Dogs. There's a lot of stuff. So we'll talk Route 66 today. Eli Burke, a normal producer for this show, is in the sports lounge this morning. And you weren't here last week because you went to see Luke Combs.
It is great to be back, though. Good morning, Wendy. Luke Combs was fantastic. I was out in South Bend, Indiana, seeing him at Notre Dame Stadium. And his tour has just been continuing to go hot. He just did another jam-packed show in Columbus, Ohio last night as well. I wish I could have been there, too.
All right. So was it more special that it was at Notre Dame?
It felt really cool. That was my first time ever being at that campus, and it is a stunning place to go to really any event. It was really cool being there in April, and it felt like a football game day. Everyone on the campus was in their Notre Dame gear. The crowd was packed, getting going early in the morning. That was truly surreal.
Embarrassingly, I cannot name one Luke Combs song. Would I know any?
Don't feel bad.
I was going to pull you into
I know Luke Combs.
Me too.
I know who he is, but I don't know any songs.
Yeah.
His biggest song is called Hurricane. That one came out about 10 years ago, and he still performs that one at every concert. But he has just had a smash album after smash album. I think he's nearing number one yet again.
Wow.
And he's just pumping out tickets like nobody else can right now either.
All right, well, concert tickets are very expensive.
Yes, they are.
And there was a settlement between Live Nation and I don't even know the whole gist of it, but we're going to talk to attorney Rich Lankoff later on this morning. And I have my fingers crossed because ticket prices have got to go down. I mean, I'm not going to ask you how much you spent for tickets, although I'm very curious, so that's up to you.
These ones honestly weren't that bad. There were a couple events I've been to this year that were like double or triple the price of these. So
three digits?
Well, I played, it was three digits for these, but it was low three digits.
Okay, see, that's not acceptable. Schwani, how much were concerts when we went to them?
Oh, about $1.98.
Oh, well, you, come on.
Oh, now I'm jealous.
I never had it that
No,
long.
I'm exaggerating.
Yeah.
But yeah, $30, $40, yeah. I guess, $50 maybe.
We'll talk to Rich Lankoff about that because I know that the artists can set their rates. Was it Pearl Jam that went after Ticketmaster and said, no, we're not going to, I don't even remember. But all the
Didn't
bands.
Taylor Swift have a big impact on that?
Yeah, so how
after
come her
some
tickets are so expensive?
Well,
I mean, even minus the service charges. That's what I mean. I don't know. So we'll talk about this later on. And Neil Fisher is in the producer's seat today. And Neil, just for the heck of it, you went to New York for the weekend.
I did. I had to celebrate. My wife finished her musical that she directed. She directed Legally Blonde at Riverside Brookfield High School, which you know of.
Yes, that's my alma mater.
Your alma mater.
Woo! Congrats to her, by the way.
Yeah, she did a wonderful job, and it was her birthday this weekend, and then I handed in my latest book. So we thought, let's go to New York, see a few plays, and have some fun.
All right, first of all, how many books is this for you?
The one I just handed in will be number 9 coming out in December.
And can you tell us what the new one is about?
I can now, yeah. It's called Mission Impossible, The Ultimate Fan Guide. It's about all the films and the TV series, yeah.
I love it. What was your very first book?
My very first book was Being Patrick Swayze, Essential Teachings from the Master of the Mullet. It was a love letter to Patrick Swayze.
He was amazing. And you mentioned a movie in that book that he was in that's when everybody fell in love with him. And we're going to talk to someone about that movie today. Explain.
Yeah, so if you're familiar with S.E. Hinton, she wrote the classic book The Outsiders, and Patrick Swayze was in The Outsiders with just a wonderful cast. Tom Cruise, Rob Lowe, Emilio Estevez, Ralph Macchio, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. And Danny Boy O'Connor, one of the founding members of House of Payne, bought the house that they filmed in and turned it into an outsider's museum.
I read that book in eighth grade.
I loved that book, yeah. And I am super embarrassed. My kids read it. Again, mm-hmm. They're in their 20s. Everybody read it in high school. And I said to my son, Dylan, I didn't know S.E. Hinton was a woman.
Yeah.
And Dylan says to me, Mom, most women had to use just their initials because, you know, it's a man's world. And he's probably right with that. He just was saying that. But is that true?
It probably is, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she was 15 when she wrote the book, which is insane.
I remember, like, reading saying it was much easier to get published if you use your initials that way because there was no, like, scrutiny. So it does make sense like that.
Yeah.
15?
15 when she wrote it, 18 when it was published. Can you believe that? Now people still read it. I mean, decades later.
That is the greatest book, and the movie was outstanding. First of all, anything Francis Ford Coppola does is A-OK in my book. And that cast of very attractive young men, wow!
I mean, it's a who's who. I mean, I didn't even mention C. Thomas Howell or Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
I mean,
Pony Boy.
More and more. Diane Lane in the movie.
She's great. I have goosebumps. This is so weird. I didn't realize how much I loved the book and the movie, but we'll be talking about that later on. And, all right, you had a celebrity sighting while in New York, too?
Yeah, we love doing afternoon tea, because we're big Anglophiles, I guess, and we're at the Crosby Hotel, and first we get there and we see Oscar winner Benicio del Toro come in for a little cocktail, dressed in sweatpants, so no one paid him any mind, but he was just enjoying himself, which was great. And then all of a sudden I see this large, muscular man walking in. I said, that's the star of The Mummy. That's Brendan Fraser. And he came near our table. I said, hey, big fan, man. And he winked at both of us and said, have a nice time. And it was just really nice. So.
Ah.
Yeah.
All right. That's a weird combo to see those two people.
I know, right?
Brendan Fraser and is it Fraser? I think
Fraser,
it is.
Fraser, yeah.
Yeah. And Benicio del Toro, which means Benny the Bull, by the way. Thank you very
much. I love that.
Sweatpants, though. Why do celebrity? I mean, I know they're going incognito.
Yeah.
But in the words of George Costanza or whoever, you don't go in public in sweatpants.
It's funny. Colleen teaches at a high school. She directs high school theater. And when I was in high school, we wore jeans. We tried to dress up. And when I go there to help consult or help on the musicals and the plays, every kid is in sweatpants. And the first day I went to help her out, I said, is it like comfy day or something? And she said, no, that's what they wear every day.
And like pajama pants are really popular too, right?
Yeah, the flannel ones and the Uggs and slippers. I mean, it's basically rolling out of bed, just going about your business, I guess. I mean, I think the most I ever wore that was comfy was a hoodie when I was in college, but that was it. I'd always, you know, dress to impress, or if I had to go do something, I didn't want to, you know, look frumpy, so.
Oh. Well, all right, so that's exciting, and I'm just trying to think. The first time I ever flew, I was in high school. I was a junior, I think, sophomore. And I remember getting so dressed up not for school, although we did dress up in school, you're right, but I dressed up so much for the airplane, you know, blazers. And now you go on an airplane, and there are people cutting their toenails.
I was like, going to say, taking off their shoes.
Yeah, don't do that. Oh, see, I don't really like to travel for so many reasons. Did you have anybody cutting their toenails on the plane back from New York?
We didn't, but I sort of have a feet phobia, so I always see the sandals coming off, and then someone did have their feet, because it was an emptier plane, but they had their feet up on the seat in front of them, barefoot.
Neil, I'm with you there.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to see.
Oh, that's so bad. Honest to God, people, you don't have to go back to dressing up, but can we just, like, I don't know, be a little more in control of things? It's like, that isn't your living room. Same at movie theaters. People laugh because older people don't know how to turn down the brightness on their phone. I know how to do it, okay? So just, that's why I don't go anywhere anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we all have the big TVs now. It's hard when you go to the theater, though. Everyone's bringing blankets, and they're sneaking in, you know, different drinks and food. I saw someone bring an entire pizza to a movie theater recently with a blanket, so.
Okay, that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I saw a video this week of a guy with a full seafood boil in the movie theater.
Okay, did he just take video of that to go viral
or something? It might have been a skit, but it did its job for me.
All right. Now, I don't know if this is true, and since you're president of the Luke Combs fan club, Eli, someone said, look up the story of Luke Combs randomly pulling over to help a woman and change her flat tire somewhere in Tennessee maybe 3 to 5 years ago.
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. There was another video that actually just resurfaced this morning. There was a 12-year-old in the crowd of one of his shows on his previous tour, but it got brought back up because his most recent tour is being so successful right now. There were like 12-year-olds in the pit that said their parents didn't approve of them buying tickets, but they went against the words. Like, Luke brought him on stage and like basically made their night. He has he does pretty much whatever he can to make the fans feel the most special they can at one of his shows. He does he always goes the extra mile, is,
right,
I guess, long story short.
That's pretty admirable. I'll give you that. Like I said, this is a little behind the scenes, this first half hour of the show, because there was just a font of information from all you guys about everything. And 906 just texted, Metallica was the one who testified in Congress against Ticketmaster. I do remember that. So we will talk ticket prices. We will talk about the Outsiders Museum. And, all right, let's talk Route 66 for a second. Have you done the whole Route 66 journey, Dave Schwann?
Twice.
You really have?
Yes, twice. I did it myself in 1993, and then my dad and I did it again in 2009.
That's fabulous.
And we drove it as we were talking just before we went on the air, and I mentioned this during Dave's program Friday. My mother grew up in southern Illinois near St. Louis, and when I was a little kid, we took 66. There was a time when I-55 wasn't fully finished yet, and we'd take 66 quite a ways through Bloomington and Lincoln, Illinois, and through Springfield and further south to get down to Alton, where my mom's family was.
Oh, all right. And it's 100 years of Route 66?
100 years. There was a patchwork of roads from Chicago, you know, going south, southwest, and then out to St. Louis. That's right. Joplin, Missouri. It's right. But this was 1926 was when the highway as a single number, as a single unit, was established. And Route 66 has been, you know, talked about in books and the TV show that was out in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And, of course, the song, Get Your Kicks on Route 66 and all of that. So it has this aura to it, this mystique. And now, even more so because it was decommissioned by the Highway Department in around 1985 or so. So it's kind of like a ghost highway, but it's still very, very present. It's really, really I just became more fascinated with it as time went on.
Well, here's where I'm confused, because I know now that there is a sign commemorating the beginning of Route 66 at Navy Pier.
Right.
And the end of it is at the Santa Monica Pier, right?
Yes. Technically, it's the actual end of the road is fairly close to the Santa Monica Pier, but not right at it. You don't just drive right onto the pier.
Which is, yes. And that's a good point. because the official eastern starting point of historic Route 66, you know, I bet, the intersection of what, downtown Chicago?
It was at, originally it was Jackson and Michigan Avenue or Columbus Drive and Lakeshore Drive, and now that was way back in the day. I guess Jackson Boulevard ran both east and west. Now Jackson runs one way east. Adams, just a block north, runs one way west. So to start, you get on Adams in Michigan and just keep going. There's a legendary restaurant, though, on Jackson near Union Station, Lou Mitchell's.
Oh, I've been there.
Almost since the beginning of the road.
And at the end of it, near the Santa Monica Pier, isn't there some other restaurant that has their claim to fame that it's right near the end of it?
There are a couple others that go through there in San Bernardino, and there's a place that's a legendary place right on Pacific Coast Highway, not far from the end of Route 66, called Patrick's Roadhouse.
That's a marvelous place.
I love Patrick's Roadhouse.
All right, the highway was established in 1926. Correct me if I'm wrong, because Wikipedia sometimes is truthful, and sometimes
you don't know where.
Yeah, it's made up a pedia. It stretches about 2,448 miles.
That's right.
Passing through. 20,
rounded off, 2,500.
All right. Yeah. Passes through Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico.
Yes.
Really? Arizona.
Yes.
And California.
You got it. That's right.
That is the only thoroughfare that I say route. Everything else I say route. Route 38 is Roosevelt
route
Road.
Route 38, yeah. Route is one of those words, either way you say it is correct. It could be route, it could be route.
Yeah,
you know.
But that's the only... Route 66 is the only way
the only
I
one
say,
you
route.
Say route. That's because
yes.
you've heard it in the song, you heard it in the TV show. Yeah, sure.
Well, that is so cool that you went on the whole thing. I think, you know, anyone who goes to L.A., makes the trip to Santa Monica and takes the picture with the Route 66 sign. I've done it. I think everybody's done it.
I have a feeling that Dave was on a motorcycle, like Easy Rider, though, on Route 66.
No, I was in a car. I want to mention, too, that if anybody's listening... and they're thinking about doing this and they haven't done it, if you're going to do this round trip instead of just driving out there and flying home, if you're going to do this round trip from Chicago to LA, allow yourself 2 full weeks, a full 14 days. Otherwise, you're just going to be too rushed and you're not going to enjoy it. And that will also allow you to stop off at places like the Grand Canyon. And kind of take your time, especially when you're going through western New Mexico and western Arizona, where the road gets really tough. You really have to go slow.
Really?
Yeah.
That would.
'Cause you're in the mountains. You're in the mountains up there.
I have only seen the Grand Canyon through the eyes of the Brady Bunch.
No.
That is the only time, and I've talked
to
a lot of people.
You have to see it to believe it.
I know, but everyone, not everyone. 80% of the people I've spoken to said it wasn't, they weren't as awestruck as they thought they were going to be. I don't know that I believe that.
Yeah. One of the things with the Grand Canyon is you get there, you've seen so many wonderful pictures of it. With me, when I've been there, you go to the South Rim and you're looking at it, and then you pick up little details and you go, oh, that's neat. And then it just kind of sinks in, you know?
That's pretty cool. You know, yeah. As America is celebrating 250 years, wouldn't it be a great idea to go see some of these wonderful American landmarks?
Certainly. Certainly. There is so much to see in our country.
There really is.
It really is amazing.
And we take it for granted.
We do. We do. I've been very fortunate to have been in all 50 states, and there are still places I haven't seen.
You are the only person I know.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who's been to all 50 states.
Yeah.
That
well,
is impressive.
There's still things I haven't seen, a lot of things I haven't seen.
I'm going to make you an award. I'm going to make you a trophy of some sort. I don't know what it is yet, but I'll find it. We are going to take a break. We've got news coming up with Dave Schwann, and then after which we're going to do Wendy's Hypochondriac Corner. We'll talk to Dr. Santina Wheat, and we've got a great show planned for you. It is Sunday morning here on 720 WGN. And at 9:33, it's time for Schwanee's far-flung forecast.
Thanks, Wendy. Good morning, everybody. And get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices. We head down south today to Monroeville, Alabama. Monroeville, Alabama is in the southern portion of the state and has a population of just under 6,000 people. It goes back to around 1832. It was originally known as Walker's Mill and Store, named for a gentleman named Major Walker, but then later became Monroeville and is the county seat there. But we bring up Monroeville, Alabama, because it is home to the author Harper Lee, who wrote the classic novel To Kill a Mockingbird.
I'm shocked I know that.
And you're absolutely right. Nell Harper Lee was her full name. But this coming Tuesday is her 100th birthday anniversary. Aww. Born in Monroeville, Alabama, April 28th, 1926. She died 10 years ago in 2016, but that was her first novel, To Kill a Mockingbird. It won the Pulitzer Prize and then became a great, great movie with Gregory Peck. But Monroeville, Alabama, hometown of Harper Lee, and Monroeville, Alabama right now has 72 degrees, cloudy skies.
Did you know we were also going to discuss S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders today?
No,
Isn't that so
coincidental?
Yeah. Kismet,
High school reading all over again.
Yes, exactly. Maybe we'll throw in The Scarlet Letter later on today.
Yes, this is the reader's corner.
Love it. Steve Bertrand is going to call, and he wants his ideas back because he's got his little book club podcast.
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating, and happy posthumous birthday celebratory festivities to Harper Lee.
100 years ago, yeah.
That's incredible. All right. Thank you so much, Swanee. And we will check in with Dr. Santina Wheat for, it's Wendy's Hypochondriac Corner coming up next. Good morning. It's Wendy Snyder here, and let's say hello to Dr. Santina Wheat. This Week in Health is sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, and Dr. Wheat is Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. Hello again, Dr. Wheat.
Hello. I hope you're doing well today.
Yes, I'm doing well. Last week we were talking about scratchy throats, and it seems that every Sunday morning I have a little bit of a scratchy throat and may have it for this whole springtime.
Sounds about right, unfortunately.
I know, everybody. All right, I found this story earlier this week, and I was so excited to discuss this with you because when I was growing up, I played in the dirt. I mean, we all kind of did to this day. I don't wear gloves when I garden. I'm looking at my nails are filthy right now because I just like getting my hands in the dirt. Well, there is this preschool. I know it's in Finland, but it had some interesting research where they took away a lot of the fabricated playthings in their play yard and let the kids make mud pies again and go back into playing in the dirt, basically. They replaced all the artificial playground surfaces with natural elements, and it turns out that they became healthier. Please explain.
Yeah, I was really excited to see this, too. I remember there being stories about it a couple of years ago when they were creating it. But the idea behind this is that when we expose our youngest ones to the natural environment, that means that their bodies are actually able to stimulate responses. And so that means that as they become exposed to different viruses and bacteria as they go through their life, their bodies are better prepared to handle it. And we're seeing this in other things, too. The idea behind allergies has shifted recently being in the past couple of years, when we realize that when we expose people to allergens, they're less likely to actually have allergic reactions. And so I think we're just learning more and more that it's a good idea to expose our kids young to things and make sure that they're around the natural environment, and that actually allows us to be healthier.
And it's so weird because, as I said, when I was a little kid, I mean, I had a sandbox that I played in all the time, and I'll bet you $100 the neighbor's cat used our sandbox too. But we just got dirty. And then when my boys were born, they're in their mid-20s, don't give them peanut butter. Don't give them shellfish. We were told not to, and I could be wrong here, but I never heard of peanut allergies when I was growing up.
Yeah, and the guidance has changed. So now we are recommending that we give those to kids early because we have seen such an increase in those allergens or in those allergies. And so yes, absolutely. You're right. We were told for a while to try to restrict things, to try to be as clean as possible, and that guidance is going away. And so hopefully that means more fun and healthier kids.
And how do we find out all this information? Obviously, for kids, hopefully your pediatrician will tell you, but, you know, what to expect when you're expecting. We all have read the same books. Are there new updated books to help us with the changing information?
I'm going to be honest, I haven't looked recently myself, but when I had my kids, they're both tweens and teens now, the data was starting to change then, and so some of the books were changing at that point. But yes, I think that we will see that. I think that we'll see more guidance that's out there to be exposed to our natural environments, which is good for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, I relied on those books. It was so exciting being pregnant the first time and the second time. The second time I just wanted to meet my kid, you know. Right. But there should be a book, and maybe I should write one, on what to do with young adults, because it is hard to navigate that, you know. Babies don't talk back. We have changed things, and it's hard. I mean, being a parent is a challenge these days. So talk to your doctors. That really is the best place to start, and you can flat out ask them if there's been any changes, right? I mean, what do you recommend?
Absolutely. Yes, that's what we're there for. People think that when they come in for the well child checks for their children, that it's just about the vaccines, but it's not. That's actually the time where we want you to ask us the questions that you have, and that we're there to give you guidance for what will be happening over the next year or few months, depending on how old your kid is. That is what that time is for. We want to help you and guide you through this process the best we can.
And speaking of vaccines, I have read in the news that RFK Jr. is now saying it's okay to get a measles vaccine. Here's the only thing. I'm not here to be Ms. Vaccine, but I just want to make a point here. Measles went away. Measles are back. Mumps had gone away. Mumps are back. I've read something somewhere that polio has come back. These vaccines work, do they not?
These vaccines absolutely work. This is one of the hardest things over the past couple of years for physicians to see. Measles was considered eradicated in the United States, and we've had the greatest outbreak in the past year since that happened. And so absolutely, these vaccines work. You should talk to your doctors about giving them to your kids. There is guidance if you're traveling to places to even consider giving these vaccines early. Please have these conversations with us. We just want to keep your family the healthiest possible.
And another vaccine that is kind of exciting in the world of medical news, Major Cancer Research, they had this conference going on, and there is an mRNA vaccine that has been shown to keep patients with pancreatic cancer alive a little longer. Is it not true that pancreatic cancer, once you're diagnosed, usually you go fairly quickly?
Unfortunately, this is one of the cancers that we really haven't had a lot of treatment for, and often it's diagnosed so late. So, mm-hmm. Yes, this is one of those ones that we really need new treatments for. And so this story is a really exciting one to me. The way this vaccine works, it's for a very small group of people who are diagnosed early and have operable pancreatic cancer. And so they actually take a piece of the tumor and create a customized vaccine for the individual person. And then the vaccine is given to that person, and it stimulates their body to know how to fight the type of pancreatic cancer that they have. I think this is absolutely amazing. And there's vaccines, they're looking into similar things for other types of cancer. And I'm really excited about what this can mean for the future of cancer treatment.
I saw that, and I couldn't believe, you know, unfortunately, I bet every listener listening has been affected by cancer in some way, shape, or form. So, such great news, and the world of science It keeps going, and it's going to keep going till we get solutions to a lot of things. Dr. Wheat, we're going to take a quick break, and we have some more topics to discuss this week in health, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. If you have any questions, 312-981-7200. We'll be back here on 720 WGN. All right, Wendy Snyder here with you on a Sunday morning, and we're talking to Dr. Santina Wheat. She is Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. And someone has texted in, 847, my grandson in New Jersey goes to a day camp called Mud Camp. He loves it, and he gets filthy. And then 773 says, the Chicago Park District has a nature play space project. Neighborhoods ask, a gentleman, Sean Schaefer, goes to work with families to create playgrounds of tree stumps, stone, rocks. He loves his job, and boy, does that sound like fun. So, yeah, play in the mud. Do it. Do some gardening because it's springtime. Now, I want to talk to you about something I knew nothing about. I'm not getting any younger, and I'm starting to find out there are things that happen that are age-related. Let's talk macular degeneration. I just want to say that I woke up one morning looking out of one eye. I saw what appeared to be a black circle in the center of my eye, which almost looked like a cigarette burn. And I thought, that's kind of weird. And it didn't go away. I would blink and blink, and it was still there. So I went to my eye doctor as soon as I could get in that afternoon. And he said, you need to go to a retina specialist right now. So I went to a retina specialist, and they dilated my eyes. What had happened was I developed some kind of fluid under my retina, and I now know that that is called wet age-related macular degeneration. And you know what the treatment is for that, Dr. Wheat?
It sounds like it's an injection.
Yes, right, I get a shot in my eye, and it sounds crazy, but it has removed the fluid. In the old days, when you got fluid under your retina, you lost your vision.
Yeah, and this is really a game-changing treatment for people. I'm so glad that you're getting it. When you get this treatment early, it can actually help reverse your vision loss so that you can see better. And then if you continue to get it, it helps prevent the vision loss over time.
It is incredible. And I did one round of treatments. It's like every 4 to 5 weeks, and the fluid had completely dissipated. So I was finished. He said, you know, come back in a year. But oddly enough, it did come back. And I am now every 4 to 5 weeks getting these injections. And he will start spreading it out, but so far, so good. The fluid is gone. And why do these things happen as we get older? I don't like it.
I don't love that things happen when we get older either. There are other things that people can do to help prevent this as well. It seems that if you quit smoking, it can help decrease your risk of this as well. And then also healthy eating. There's some association with obesity and this, and so making sure that you stay a healthy weight can help prevent this as well.
So basically, we're learning every week when we speak to you that don't smoke, eat well, lose weight, take care of yourself for pretty much everything, right?
It really does seem to impact everything. It's the basis of how we can keep ourselves as healthy as possible.
Oh, and no alcohol, too. So when can we have fun in our lives?
You can go out and play in the mud.
Yes. All right. Well, that is fun with a vodka tonic, maybe. There's wet macular degeneration. There is dry macular degeneration. There have also been some suggestions to take some. They're called eye vitamins, but basically it's your vitamins A, C, and E, which are great for you anyway. My retina specialist also said that steroids can contribute to this, and stress, which I find we all have stress. And I'll tell you the truth. The first time this happened to me was the very first time I ever took steroids. So I don't know if there's a connection or not, but Those really wreak havoc with your body, yet they help your body. Explain that one to us.
I wish I could.
All right. So just really, if you have any problems with your eye, don't hesitate, I guess, basically is the point of this. There was one time I saw what appeared to be like lightning in my peripheral vision. And I, again, went to the eye doctor because that could be a detached retina. And he looked in my eyeball and he explained that that, again, is just a part of getting older, where your eye is kind of jelly-like and sometimes it just kind of deteriorates a little and you see that happening. But anything visually, I would, you don't need to go to an emergency room, do you, for things like this?
No, usually you can go, you can call your ophthalmologist, especially if you already have a relationship with one. Many of them have emergency appointments so they can get you to be seen, usually the same day or the next day. And so I would start there. If you completely lose your vision, that would be a reason to go to the emergency room because then they can call an ophthalmologist down. So I would say start with your doctor to see if it can get you quickly into an ophthalmologist. Otherwise, depending on how serious your vision change is, then you can consider the emergency room.
Yeah, because I'm telling you, you don't appreciate your vision until there's, you know, some fear in you that you may lose it. So, and finally today, I saw this in the news as well. There's a 988 hotline. And I didn't even know about this, I'm embarrassed to say. I'm all about mental health, and if you have any problems, to go ahead and ask for help. But this has been put together. It's a mental health crisis hotline and a suicide hotline as well. Explain the 988, because, again, I'm embarrassed I didn't know about this program.
You know, it's considered the 988 Lifeline.
Right.
It is a number that you can call at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can have, when you are in crisis, you can call this. I believe you can also text it and talk to someone who is skilled and able to help you. It is a free hotline for those who call, and it's confidential. They don't share it with anyone. And they can really help individuals create a plan when they are feeling like they are thinking about suicide. They can help connect them with local people who can help them. And really, they can help them feel more hope and that they're not alone, which is one of the most important steps when someone is feeling this way.
And according to statistics, the suicide rate for teens and young adults, and we don't say commit suicide anymore, died by suicide. It's really hard to make that change, but, you know, you're not committing a crime. So people, young adults and teens die by suicide. That has gone down in the first 2.5 years of this Lifeline project. And again, this has been going on for 2.5 years, and there needs to be more advertisement for it. So 988 is your lifeline if you're in crisis. There are people standing by to help you. And again, I just wanted to bring it up because I didn't know about it.
Yeah. And again, you can call it, you can text it. They have chat. So any way that you prefer to communicate with people, it is available to you. And so this is a really important resource.
Well, thank you so much. Another week of great information. We look forward to talking to you and learning stuff. So thank you, Dr. Wheat. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a great week.
You as well, Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. See that little tickle in the back of my throat? It's allergy season, so I apologize for that. We have Shawnee's News coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And at 10 o'clock, we are going to talk to Danny Boy O'Connor about his new book, The Outsiders. It's an oral history of The Outsiders, Staying Gold, Pony Boy. And we're going to talk about the museum that he has purchased and runs. And it's all coming your way next here on 720 WGN. Oh, this is beautiful. This is an old tune from House of Pain. Joining us right now, that's, of course, Stevie Wonder. It's Wendy Snyder here. And please welcome Danny Boy O'Connor to the airwaves at WGN. Hi, Danny Boy.
Good morning or good afternoon. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. We have been talking about the book, the museum. First of all, let's just say, yes, House of Pain, you co-founded it, and Jump Around, we all know that song. But The Outsiders, we all know this book. We all know this movie. We've been talking about it this morning. This is one of those books you read in high school, and it has such an impact. And then a movie was made. All the generations have seen it. And you own the actual house that Francis Ford Coppola filmed this movie in. How did that happen?
Well, it's an interesting story. I didn't read in seventh grade, although it was required seventh grade reading, but I was in seventh grade when the movie came out. So I fell in love with the movie, the struggles with the characters, the problems they faced, and the hope that they saw. And never in a million years did I think I would end up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, of all places. But in 2009, we were on tour. We played the historic Kane's Ballroom. And we had a three-day layover, which meant it was cheaper to stay here than to move on to Dallas to the next spot. So I thought, what am I going to do in Tulsa, Oklahoma for 3 days? And I had an epiphany. Oh, my goodness, I think I know this place, even though I had never been here before. And it was because of The Outsiders. So I went looking for locations. I'm happy to tell you that the drive-in from the movie still exists and is still thriving. The theater that they filmed it in and that she writes about in the book, as I stepped out from the darkness to the bright sunlight, which is the Circle Cinema, is about to celebrate its 100th year anniversary. And then I found the house, which was oddly enough still here and for sale. It took me about 5 years to go back and forth pondering, you know, the possibilities. But in 2016, I believe, I bought the house and did a fundraiser online to turn it into a museum. And it's been a museum for the last 6 years or so, and we do close to 6,000 students a semester from five different states around that come for the student tours, and we're open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to the general public, and it's been doing gangbusters. And you were correct that it's a book, you're correct that it's a movie, you're correct that it's a museum, and it's also the number one musical on Broadway as well, and it's touring the U.S. as we speak, so the legacy lives on, and it's reaching all new fans as we speak, so it's been an incredible journey for me.
And what is it about this movie that appeals to all the different age groups? Because that's what astounds me. First of all, I'm a huge Francis Ford Coppola fan. Anything, you know. He could do a commercial and I'd watch it nonstop. The Outsiders, it's like it really kind of touched our we had freaks and jocks. That's what we called them in high school. What were your different the freaks and jocks?
Yeah, same thing. It wasn't freaks and jocks, but it was similar. It was just like the haves and the have nots. I came from New York when I was, you know, 7 years old, and by the time I got to high school, I went to high school, it had very much predominantly upper middle class to rich kids, and we were very much lower middle class, so I felt the class difference immediately. And it was one of those things I think that every kid goes through, whether you're from one side of the tracks or the other, you always think the grass is greener on the other side, and trying to find a place to find a happy medium is the important part, is to see the same sunset and to have that takeaway. So every time I talk to kids about it, it means something different to them, but the through line is really that there's hope, you know. And I think equally as impressive, if you know about the book, which we do, the author wrote it when she was 15 and a half. She failed English the year she wrote it, and she got a D+ in creative writing. And for me, that's even more inspiring, because, you know, it wasn't like she had a Mensa card and was valedictorian that year. She was like everybody else, struggling to make it through high school. And she wrote a masterpiece, literally an American classic that's never been out of print in over 50 years and sells more now than ever. So when I tell the students that, I think they're more impressed because the light bulbs go on. They think, well, maybe I don't test well in, you know, some of these subjects, but maybe my creative juices are still, you know, worth a lick. And
yeah,
I think in the Midwest is something that, you know, again, born in New York, raised in Los Angeles, moved to Tulsa 10 years ago from Beverly Hills. I say that to say that there's a whole swath of the U.S. that has such an authentic voice And that voice isn't told us is not enough, in my opinion, as the coastal voices. And there's such a strong bond to, you know, family and country, and just those struggles are real. And they articulate it, I think, better than, you know, than others. And this book is, there's just an authenticity about this book and movie that just shines through. So,
all right, Danny Boy O'Connor on the line with us. We're talking about the Outsiders House Museum in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're also going to talk about your book, but you keep saying she, and I want to mention that I feel so ignorant because my 23-year-old son, I said, did you know S.E. Hinton was a woman? And my son Dylan goes, yeah. I did not know that till yesterday. And
well, don't feel bad. Yeah, we get that all the time. You're not the only one.
All right. So now you've met with her. She's seen the museum. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so originally I met her, I did a podcast, and I brought on the tall Soch, Darren Dalton from the movie, and had him on, and she called into the podcast. And then after finding the house in 2009, I came back to Tulsa annually just to look at it and check in. I had the idea that it could be a museum, but I was kind of gun-shy. I didn't want to get myself, you know, in over my head. And then around 2016, I finally thought if somebody doesn't do something, it's going to get torn down, because the neighborhood that it's in was getting, like, systematically torn down. They were building new houses. And so I jumped in the 11th hour, got the house, and then the first person I went to meet was with S.E. Hinton. And I asked her, hey, if this is going to step on your toes and you know, something you're against your wishes, I don't want to buy the house and do anything with it. She says, Danny, I got enough problems with my own, keeping up my own house. Do whatever you want with that house. So I was like, okay, we got a clear runway. We've been fast friends ever since. She's an amazing woman. She's still alive. She still lives here in Tulsa. And she's been literally the number one supporter of the house financially, and just, you know, in showing up and co-signing everything we do. And it's been an incredible experience for me, because for me, you know, you said Coppola, and I'm with you with the Coppola, my absolute favorite director, but above her, him is her, and Susie is at the tip of the spear for, like, cool creatives, you know, because she's just so, there's just one, she's a one-on-one in every possible sense of the word.
I mean, what does she even say about the hugeness of her book that she wrote when she was 15 years old? I mean, is she pinching herself? Can she really believe it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to be disingenuous. I think, you know, she's never known what it's like to be famous from that book since she's about 16 years old. So for her, she's very happy that the museum exists, because we handle all of the fans that want a piece of her, but she doesn't have it to give, if you understand. And so she's a very much, guarded. She likes her personal space.
Yeah.
She likes to be, you know, so for years, people were asking her, can you come out to speak to our school again? Can you come speak to the students? And she had done it for a while, but I think it was too much, you know, it was heavy for her. So
yeah.
With the museum, we not only service the fan base from all the generations, but we do the school tour specifically Monday through Thursday as a nonprofit. And like I said, the school tours are ridiculous, the amount of kids that we get from all over the U.S., but mainly, like, you know, the five surrounding states and everything in Oklahoma. And those kids, it's like a Willy Wonka and a, you know, chocolate factory
yeah.
tour for them. I mean, I never got a tour like that when I was a kid. So
me neither.
I can only imagine. But when you see the smiles, the cries of joy, and the, you know, all of the reenactment that they try to do, and it's incredible. And it's just a wonderful day in Tulsa for these kids to just, you know, visualize all the stuff they just read about. So.
Well, what an accomplishment for S.E. Hinton and for you, because now you mm-hmm. have a book, Staying Gold, The Oral History of the Outsiders. And it came out this past November.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Book came out. Yeah.
All right. So you got to do the interviews with, can I just tell you the star-studded cast, by the way?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Rob Lowe, Ralph Macchio, C. Thomas Howell, Leif Garrett, David Arquette, Dennis Quaid. This is unbelievable. So tell us about mm-hmm. what you learned that you didn't know prior
well,
to these interviews.
You know what? There's so much it would take an entire week to unpack. But one of my favorite memories of doing that book, which was we were on the phone with Ralph Macchio for about an hour and a half getting an interview from him. And then we hung up the phone and we went to the front of the museum. We were doing it in my car on the premises. And we got to the front door and there was a father and his daughter who drove all the way from New Jersey. And I said, oh, would you like to be interviewed for a book we're working on? Potentially we could use it. And he said, I have a crazy story. And this is, we hear crazy stories all the time, but his story really touched me because he said, Danny, I'm the same age as you. And this movie was my favorite movie. It was my favorite book. And he thought, you know, I'm keeping my book from when I'm 16. And when I have a son, I will turn him into an Outsiders fan and we will read the book together and, you know, enjoy this legacy. And he did have a son. And his son did turn 16, and he gave him the book, and it just didn't resonate with him. He was so bummed out and depressed about it. And he said, a week later, my daughter, who was like 13 at the time, picked up the book and devoured it, and it became her favorite. And little did I know that this was what it was meant for. And now she's 16, and I said, you can go anywhere in the U.S., and I'll take you there for your birthday. And she said, Dad, I want to go to the Outsiders' house. So we drove all the way from New Jersey to meet us. And it was just the irony of just, you know, wanting to pass it on to your son, but your daughter picks it up and that becomes her favorite. And it solidified the bond between father and daughter in a way that, you know, nothing else could. That book is, there's magic in that book. And there's many stories that I could tell you just like that. At this point, I'm never amazed or shocked by any of the stories. I'm always amazed, but never shocked by the stories that I hear, because it's just, I can't even put into words how important this book is and why it touches people in so many different ways. But it is magic, and we're happy to service the legacy and make sure that it continues on.
Where do we get this book? Because I am sorry to say I didn't have a chance to pick up the book before I'm talking to you, and now that's what I'm going to do this afternoon is order this book. What's the best place?
You can get it anywhere from any of your top booksellers, or Amazon is probably the easiest, cheapest way to do it. And I have, you know, faith that you're still there.
Diane Lane was very lucky getting to work with Matt Dillon, Ralph Macchio, C. Thomas Howell, Patrick Swayze, Rob Lowe, mm-hmm. Emilio Estevez. I'm so sorry that it didn't work out for Tom Cruise. I wonder what happened to him.
I know, right?
Jeez.
But he had the smallest role in The Outsiders and is the biggest star in the world.
How about that? Now, how did Coppola mm-hmm. find these? Some were unknown actors at the time, right?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, his producing partner and him, you know, held open casting calls in the West Coast and East Coast. And I think everybody in Hollywood, you know, at one point read for this thing, and he just kept pairing two different people. Now, you be Dallas, and you be John, and you be Ponyboy, and you be Cherry. And he just said when he started to feel that there was a good, you know, swath of those actors, and then they gelled right, he picked those actors. But I do know that Matt Dillon went in there. They called for him specifically. Coppola took one look at him and said, send him home. And so he left the casting office kind of dismayed and called his mom and said, no. And he took one look at me and told me to go home. And she was like, oh, better luck next time. And then about an hour later, they said, you got the gig. So Coppola saw him immediately and knew that's what I'm looking for in Dallas. And, you know, it was a sure thing. He didn't even need him to read, so.
Oh, man. Yeah. All right, a texter just texted in from 847. Have any of the actors from the movie come out to the museum? I'm sure they have.
Great question. So, yes is the answer. We've had C. Thomas Howell come by, Ponyboy, many times, from playing music on the lawn to autograph signings, movies on the lawn. We've had Ralph Macchio, Darren Dalton, Natasha, Essie Hinton, obviously, has been many times. We have a whole autograph wall in there at the museum of all the people who have ever worked on this movie, whether they were caterers to the top stars. Matt Dillon's been by. Rob Lowe's been by. It's easier to tell you who hasn't been by.
Yeah.
It's an incredible, like I said, it just never, every weekend we're packed. We don't do any advertising other than posts on social media or ours. And organically, it just resonates year after year, and immense new fans every year in seventh grade. So we're very fortunate and happy to, you know, keep her legacy alive and well.
You know, I liked George Orwell and the book 1984, but you don't see me like getting a whole museum. I know these. Listen, I just love the story of S.E. Hinton. Maybe wasn't just like everyone else, but you have to do what makes you happy. You've done that. This is now what, the third Outsiders book that you've been a part of?
Yeah, well, we've done three coffee table books and then one written book with Penguin, the book you're talking about. And I got a few more up my sleeve. And like I said, you know, going back to what you just said, the opportunity to do museums based off of legacies is something that is very much a good opportunity for anybody who loves something as much as I do to look into that, especially in the age of AI where everything is becoming antiquated and digital. And, you know, these historic locations are worth saving. And I think more people should do. I mean, I know that you probably know that there's the Christmas Story Museum in Cleveland and the Field of Dreams in Iowa and the Goonies House in Oregon. And a lot of people are looking at these things now like, hey, man, we should save these for the, you know, future generations to, you know, discover the legacies. So.
Yeah, but it also makes us feel better going back down that path of nostalgia, doesn't it?
Of course. It's a time that it was a lot simpler. Life was a lot easier. And yeah, so we hark back to that. And again, the book does the heavy lifting. You know, the book year after year gets discovered by a new, you know, horde of teens, and they fall in love with it. And some of the legacies do not regenerate like that. So it's easier said than done. But I love that people are looking at these movie, history, literature locations and saying, hey, we should probably, you know, take a look at saving these things because the world's a better place for it.
Oh, absolutely. All right, here is my to-do list. Tonight, I'm going to go home and watch The Outsiders because it's been a long time since I've seen the movie. I'm going to order Staying Gold, The Oral History of the Outsiders. There's an audio book, too. How do you, you and Soleil Moon Frye, huh?
Yeah, she's her old school friend from back in the day. She was there when we first, you know, came to prominence and fame with our hip-hop, you know, albums, and she's been a fast friend for years, so, she was the perfect person to do it. When I went to California to show her the photo book that I was working on, her daughters were completely obsessed, and they're like, dude, what are you talking about? We know that they were reciting lines, and I was like, she's the perfect person to do it. She's got a raspy voice, and she's a greaser at heart, so.
That's awesome. We all watched Punky Brewster, too. And my third thing I'm going to do is sometime this summer, I'm going to head over to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and check out the Outsiders House Museum, because, damn, this sounds so cool. Congratulations on all the success. Please give S.E. Hinton my best and thank her for the culture she gave us, because it really means a lot to us.
Yeah, I will do that. It's been a pleasure.
No, I was just wondering if you're working on any music, too. Just got to ask you that.
Yeah, you know what? At 57 years old, I think, you know, that's behind me. We've went on a few tours, but other than riding the gravy train, I love what I do here. And I do want to touch on how much Tulsa's changed. In the last 10 years that I've been here, this place is going, like, off the Richter scale. There's so many new attractions and the historic value that's here. Route 66 is running through. We have the longest rideable route of Route 66, and this year is the
100 years, baby.
100 years. It starts in Chicago. You guys know.
That's right.
But it runs through, yeah, but it runs through here quite nice, and so we're kind of gearing up for all of the gearheads and motorcycle boys and all of that to come through. So it's incredible town. When you get here, you can look me up, and I will give you the nickel tour for free.
Excellent. Such a pleasure to meet you, Danny Boy O'Connor.
Thank you,
and good luck with everything. Staying Gold, The Oral History of the Outsiders, and you can go to theoutsidershouse.com and make a little trip this summer, people, because it's worth checking out. Thank you, Danny. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Stay gold.
All right. You too. Stay gold. I love it. Danny Boy told me to stay gold. I like it. All right. We are going to talk TV with Alex Zalbin. We're going to get to some news with Schwani. It's all happening right here, 720 WGN. Yep. Our television man back with us, Alex Zalbin, host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast. You can find him at comicbookclublive.com. Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Wendy?
I'm doing well. I'm getting this out of the way because this texter texts me every week that we talk to you. And 630 wants to know, will Kathy Bates' Matlock be renewed?
Good question. It's been a pretty big hit, and I believe it was renewed for a third season couple of months back. I don't know exactly when it'll premiere, but most likely it'll be October or September, something around that. This is a pretty regular broadcast show, so likely if you're waiting, if you're anxiously awaiting the third season, check it in the regular fall season of TV. So again, probably end of September, beginning of October is when you can catch up with it again.
All right, 630, because I know you've been asking every week, and I always run out of time. So I wanted to get that out of the way right away. Does Kathy Bates play Matlock?
She does. She plays Matlock on the show, and there's a great cast in general. Jason Ritter, one of my absolute favorites.
I love him.
Gina Rodriguez was a guest star. Bo Bridges popped up a couple of times. So it's really good. Yeah, it's kind of shocking that Kathy Bates is the new Matlock, but she's really making it work.
I love that she is playing the part that a man had before because, you know, why does it have to be a man? I enjoy that.
As long as you retain the core of the character, that's the important part. This also, without getting into spoilers, has a little bit of a connection to the old Matlock. So I guess it's in the same universe, the Matlock cinematic universe, if you will. So there you go.
And I absolutely loved Jason Ritter's dad. John Ritter was just such a funny, crazy guy, and he seems to be doing a lot of the things that his father did. Like, he's on social media a lot, just dancing and doing crazy things. I love him. So
I try not to get into celebrities too much. I try to just keep it as my relationship is watching their characters on TV. But him and his wife, Melanie Lynskey, who is on Yellow Jackets, they are just the best. If you ever see them together on social media, chatting, they just seem like the most adorable, wonderful, happy couple. So fingers crossed. Again, I don't get into the celebrity relationships, but I want them to go the distance.
That is so fun. I want them to go the distance. All right. I'll let them know if I ever talk to either one of them. That is so funny. Again, I'm sorry I mention this all the time, but I just watched the latest episode. And listeners, I love Tracy Morgan more than anything. I've always been a fan of Bobby Moynihan, but now he has gone off the deep end and is crazy in this show called The Fall and Rise of Reggie Dinkins. It's about a washed-up football player who got into trouble, who's trying to get back into the good graces of everyone. Great cast, very funny. I can't tell you how much I love this show.
It's great. It's ridiculous. It is from the folks who are behind 30 Rock, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and a bunch of other shows. So if you like those shows, it's right in that realm of humor. It's Tracy Morgan being absolutely unhinged. Daniel Radcliffe is so funny on it as well. And I've been really happy to see that it seems like it's picking up steam online. I don't specifically know about the ratings necessarily. I think they've been okay. But I definitely see a lot more people talking about it, posting clips, understanding that, oh, this is a ridiculous comedy show I can check out. And if you want to check it out, it is on NBC and running until, it finished up. Yeah, it finished up the first season, but you should be able to stream it all on Peacock. And fingers crossed people do, because I would love to see a second season.
I'm going to mention it every week until they renew it for the second season, because it is the dumbest, funny. I mean, I LOL all the time when I'm watching this show.
It's just ridiculous. Everybody's just having the best time on it. And yeah, let's let them have a best time again for a second season of Fall and Rise of Reggie Dinkins.
All right, tell us about Widow's Bay. What is this?
This is going to be your next obsession, I think. I mean, not necessarily you, Wendy, but our listeners. It is a horror comedy that's premiering on Apple TV this upcoming Wednesday, April 29th, with two episodes. It is created by Kitty Dippold, who's written a bunch of movies for Paul Feig, including, if I remember correctly, The Heat. She also did the actually good, though beaten on a lot, Ghostbusters reboot, among other things. But she created the show. It's about a small town in New England that really wants to be the next Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard. Unfortunately, the place is entirely cursed. So the mayor, played by Matthew Rhys, who people might know from The Americans or the recent Beast in Me, is sort of pushing back against it. He's trying to make it this tourist town. But Stephen Root, who is always the best, plays a crusty fisherman who's like, no, we need to keep people away because it's cursed. Every episode you get some sort of different haunting horror movie scenario, like evil clowns or a slasher right out of a slasher movie. A sea hag attacks people. But it always has this twisted, quirky humor running through it at the same time. I've watched the entire season. It is utterly fantastic. Unlike anything on TV, highly recommend checking it out.
All right, and that's Widow's Bay on Apple TV. A couple of listeners are Matlock fans because 630 CBS Thursday staples Ghosts and Matlock were both renewed but will premiere in January, not in the fall. So I'm just letting you know. You know, Ghosts, I've watched several seasons of, and I kind of fizzled on that. I feel like it just didn't interest me anymore. Have you watched Ghosts?
I'm in a similar position. I really like the cast of this show, and it is a huge hit, so I'm very happy about that. The more comedies, long-running comedies we can have, the better. But, yeah, it didn't really grab me. That said, if you are a fan of the show, the main star, Rose McIver, was on a great CW mystery show called iZombie, which is also supernaturally infused. You could probably figure that out from the title. Highly recommend checking that out as a follow-up watch because I love that show.
Another show I really would like people to watch. There was a show that was on called Jury Duty. And it was 12 jurors. One person was kind of being pranked and wasn't in on the joke. The rest of the people were actors and they were jurors. And that is great in itself. I didn't realize there was a second season, which I just wrapped up. It's Prime Video's Jury Duty Presents Company Retreat. Oh, my God, this is so funny. You explain it better than I do. So have you seen this?
Love the second season. I was very dubious because, like you said, the first season, it was kind of this done-in-one concept of everybody is an actor except for this one guy, Ronald Gladden, who thinks he's on a civil claims trial, but he's not. Everything is fake. Down to James Marsden, who people probably know from Sonic the Hedgehog movies, the X-Men movies. Is one of the people on the jury, which probably should have been an alarm bell, but he doesn't catch on.
No.
The second season, there's no reason this should have worked again, but they have this new guy, Anthony Norman, who's hired as a temp in the HR department at a hot sauce company, a fake hot sauce company called Rockin' Grandma's Hot Sauce, that is having their annual company retreat, and things go predictably horribly wrong right at the beginning. He rolls with the punches. Like with the first season, they somehow found somebody who seems to be the absolute nicest, most positive guy. And that's the thing that works about the show is both seasons, it's not about embarrassing the person or making fun of them. It ends up being these really earnest, very sweet, very funny situations in both categories in both seasons. And it's great. I agree with you. I was absolutely dying at the second season laughing out loud. Fantastic cast. Fantastic guest stars as well. Definitely worth checking out on Prime Video.
Yeah, just Google Jury Duty. The original is called Jury Duty, and then Jury Duty, what's it called? A Company Retreat. Just the father and son with open mouth kisses is something that is crazy town.
But, yes, I love that. And, oh gosh, I'm trying to remember her name, but there's one of the characters who's the work-at-home person, the person who's never met the rest of the company, who I thought every single line, she's obsessed with the show Bones and keeps bringing it up in every conversation. It made me laugh so hard.
This really is a feel-good. You can escape reality for a little while and just truly enjoy it. Big fan of that. Hold your thoughts, Alex. We're going to take a quick break, and then we have some more new shows coming up and some personal favorites. If you have any TV shows you're binging, 312-981-7200, 720 WGN. It's Sunday morning with me, Wendy Snyder. And Alex Zalbin, the host and producer of Comic Book Club, that long-running podcast. You can find it at comicbookclublive.com. All right, Stranger Things, Tales from 85. Cartoons?
It is. It is, in fact, an animated series extension of Stranger Things. It's streaming on Netflix right now, 10 episodes. It takes place between seasons 2 and 3, which, if it's been a while, since it's been a couple of years since those were on, basically they've closed the gate to the Upside Down. It's before the summer season that took place around July 4th. And they introduce a couple of new characters. They introduce some new beasties for the whole team to fight. It does not have the same cast as the live-action show. They have recast the folks for the voices because it's younger versions of the characters. But there are some great voices on there anyway. Odessa Azion, who was recently in Marty Supreme, plays a new character called Nikki Baxter. You've also got Janine Garofalo does a voice on it.
Oh, I love her.
Phillips. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's taken a little bit of a drubbing from fans and critics, but I thought it was pleasant enough. I enjoyed the action. It's nice to spend time with these characters again. So if you're looking for that, that's all streaming on Netflix right now.
All right, a couple of texts. Could you please ask, this is from 269, if Elsbeth will be renewed? Thank you so much. I am not familiar with Elsbeth.
Yes, Elsbeth is by the team from The Good Wife and The Good Fight, which is collectively known as The Kings. In terms of coming back, I think so. I'm trying to look this up right now.
Yeah, I know. I threw this at you.
Yeah. But it's still airing at this point. There's still a couple of episodes to go in the third season, but CBS really likes working with the Kings, so I would imagine we probably will see more.
Yes, this just in.
Sorry, it was renewed for a fourth
yes.
season.
All yes. right, good. our producer Neil loves that show, so he chimed in, and I was letting you dig. I'm sorry, that was mean of me. All right, I'm throwing another one at you from 708. Astrid. Or do you say Astrid? It's on PBS, I think Netflix. It's French, but it's subtitled in English. It's absolutely fascinating. The woman who portrays Astrid is phenomenal. This is just someone who really enjoys the show Astrid on PBS. I don't know anything about it.
I'll have to check this out. It's a mystery show on PBS. I believe you can stream it on their website, and there are 5 seasons so far. So this is the one that honestly has passed me by, but I'm always up for a good mystery series, so I'll check it out.
You know what I binged the other day? I had watched The Black Mirror when it first came out, and I don't know what happened. I always enjoyed all the episodes, but I kind of stopped watching it. So I realized I had like 3 seasons left, and I just binged it one after another, and I loved it. So many stars on the last couple of seasons of it. I think I'm all caught up.
I've been a little, for anybody who doesn't know, by the way, it is a sci-fi anthology on Netflix. It's usually very nihilistic, very dark. It has a very bleak look at technology. But I got to say, I think the most recent season is one of their best ever.
Yeah.
There's some wonderful performances in there. There's an episode with Paul Giamatti that I thought was absolutely beautiful called Eulogy.
Yes. Like that.
There's a sequel to USS Callister.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. Okay. Wait. I'm not caught up. No spoilers.
Oh, okay. No spoilers. No spoilers. But, the most recent season on Netflix, I was really surprised because I've been occasionally a little down on the show, but I thought it was just a great episode after great episode.
I am a big Twilight Zone fan and Outer Limits, and I loved Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And it's like, I don't know, kind of a modern day take on that a little bit. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for example, again, in the most recent season, there was a thing called Hotel Reverie that was all about redoing movies with AI, but putting people in the movies. It stars Issa Rae and Awkwafina and Emma
Corrin. That was great.
Oh, my God. So good. So good. So lovely. So beautifully done. Funny. Charming. Yes, definitely the descendant of Outer Limits, Twilight Zone, all of those shows.
All right. Somebody loves Elsbeth. She's an eccentric lawyer working with the police to solve murders. Someone else wanted to know Margot's. Oh, just a comment. Margot's Got Money Problems is really good, and Rooster is great. Rooster is with Steve Carell, which I haven't seen yet, and I'm dying to see it. I've heard great things. I think you liked that, didn't you?
Yeah, that's streaming on HBO Max and broadcasting Sunday nights on HBO. Steve Carell, it's just nice to see him back in, like, a good comedy role. And it's from the team, Bill Lawrence, who does Scrubs, Ted Lasso, Shrinking, all of those great shows. I'll also give a shout-out to Margo's Got Money Troubles, which comes from David E. Kelly. That's on Apple TV right now. And it has an insanely good cast. Elle Fanning, Nick Offerman, Greg Kinnear, Nicole Kidman, Michelle Pfeiffer, who is absolutely wonderful on it. And that's only broadcast, I think, at this point, 2, maybe 3 episodes. So very easy to catch up with that one in particular.
Excellent. Listeners, thanks for chiming in on some of the shows you're watching. Alex, tell us about Apex.
Sure. This is a movie that's streaming on Netflix now. It stars Charlize Theron and Taron Egerton. Charlize Theron plays a woman who suffers a tragedy and ends up going to a national park or the wilderness to sort of lose herself when she ends up being hunted by a man played by Taron Egerton. It's very silly. It's very engaging. There's good action in it. If you're looking for a big, dumb action movie with Charlize Theron and who isn't, that's streaming on Netflix right now.
All right. And Running Point.
This is one that I was a little bit iffy about in the first season, but it's really found its voice in the second season. It is a comedy, also on Netflix. It stars Kate Hudson as she is put in charge of her family's pro basketball team in Los Angeles, if I remember correctly. And it's very silly, very charming. It comes from Mindy Kaling and Ike Barinholtz.
Oh, I love both of them.
And it has a really fun cast. Brenda Song is on it. Chet Hanks, Justin Theroux recurs throughout. Drew Tarver, Scott MacArthur, who people might know from the other two and a bunch of other comedy roles. And it's just, it's fun. It's exactly what you'd expect from a family sitcom set around a basketball team, and it delivers.
And a listener has texted in with beef in all capital letters. And yes, I love cheeseburgers, but that's not what this listener's talking about. 309, tell us about season 2, because it's very different than season 1.
Yeah, the second season is now streaming on Netflix. And while the first season was a pretty simple, at least initially, road rage accident between Steven Yeun and Ali Wong, this one is much more complicated. It stars Oscar Isaac and Carey Mulligan as a couple that essentially runs a very high-end country club, or at least works there. And then Kaylee Spanny and Charles Melton are two people that are much further down the chain. They witness an incident with the first couple, and again, things spiral out from there. But like you said, it goes in very different directions from the first season. There's a conspiracy element. There's an international element. Beautifully filmed, beautifully acted. Highly recommend checking me out. Really not like anything else on TV.
All right, I need to watch that. It's on my to-do list. I have so many things to watch now. I can't stand when people go, oh, there's nothing to watch. There is always something to watch. What about the
too much to watch?
I know, I can't keep up. The Miniature Wife. I think we have time for one more. So that looks kind of cute.
Yeah, that's streaming on Peacock. It stars Elizabeth Banks and Matthew McFadyen. I never know how to pronounce his name, so apologies if I...
Oh, he's
it.
From Succession, right?
Yes, the guy from Succession, that's what I'll call him. And he invents a miniaturization device that unfortunately affects his wife, played by Elizabeth Banks, so she becomes 6 inches tall. And over the course of the 10 episodes, it spins out through there. So... yeah, it's a pleasant enough comedy. Critics weren't necessarily in love with it, but if you like Elizabeth Banks, if you like the guy from Succession, definitely check it out.
And I'm back to watching Hacks. This is the final season. I'm just an episode or two into the new season, but Jean Smart is just amazing, and so is Lorraine Newman's daughter that I can never remember her name.
Yes, Hannah Einbinder.
Yes.
It is wonderful. I've watched most of this last season. I haven't seen the end, which apparently ends in a very shocking way, and I have no idea what that's going to be. But it is just so wonderful to see these two actresses work together on TV. It really gets me. You know, watching them, they're very funny. They're very fun as they try to explore careers in comedy in very different ways. But at the same time, it's just such a heartwarming and heart-twinging relationship between these two actresses. Like you said, I'm going to be very sad to see it go.
Yeah, I really like it. And another show that's super cute that I kind of stumbled into was A Man on the Inside. I love Ted Danson, and he co-stars with his wife, Mary Steenburgen, on this. She's a little over the top in this particular show, but it's really cute.
I know I was talking about Jason Ritter and Melanie Lynskey earlier, but again, I guess another television couple that I'm really into is Ted Danson and Mary Steenburgen, and they're just the cutest together, and they are together in the second season of the show on Netflix. It's a very light, cozy mystery set on a college campus in the second season, which is different from the first season, and there is a third season coming of that show.
Oh, good. So it's cute. It really is. Alex, always a pleasure. Hopefully we'll talk to you next week. Until then, watch lots of TV.
I certainly will. Thank you, Wendy.
All right. Alex Zalvin, you can find him at comicbookclublive.com. News time right now from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Good morning. It's Wendy Snyder here. And let's say hello to Rich Lankoff. Biggest Bruce Springsteen fan ever. What song was that, Rich? Did you hear it at all?
That would be a song, Wendy, called Bobby Jean, of course, off the 1984 Born in the USA record. Everyone knows that. It'd be a hard one. Why don't you come at me with something a little more difficult this morning?
Neil Fisher, thank you very much for that. He's producing today, and we were going to try and stump you, yet we can't because you're the biggest Bruce Springsteen fan ever. I have just been watching videos. I was texting you earlier in the week because there are videos of you doing a selfie video at Bruce Springsteen shows, and you put your hand up and he high-fives you, and then he held your hand. I hadn't seen that one before. You guys were holding hands? Does he know you?
It was quite a romantic gesture by the boss to grasp my hand mid no surrender. But if you remember the last one I sent you from a couple of weeks ago in L.A., he dissed me. He left me hanging. He did not dap me up, as the kids would say.
How did this start? I mean, and how do you get seats right up at in the front like that? Well, not seats. I shouldn't say that. He has, like, no bodyguards or nothing. All your people are, like, right there touching him.
Yeah, these are things I cannot disclose on radio this morning, Wendy. But
okay,
but you
got quiet, Rich. I've never heard that happen.
Yes, I'm trying to calculate the risk associated with disclosing this information. But, of course, he'll be at the United Center here on Wednesday, so you'll have to come and find out.
Yeah, he is back on tour, and he is on fire. And despite what some people say, I think he's looking pretty good. Chicago-based...
Don't believe the True Social comments to the contrary, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Bruce is in the best shape of his life. He looks better now than he ever has.
Looks really good. For a 76-year-old man, he looks pretty good.
All right. Well, let's talk legal stuff because we are going to talk about concerts because, first of all, Rich is a Chicago-based entertainment attorney, co-host of Legal Face-Off, which you can find here on WGNRadio.com, capital member of Downey & Lankoff. And, all right, so there was a lawsuit that involved Live Nation and Ticketmaster. And Live Nation and Ticketmaster, a jury found the companies violated federal and state antitrust laws by eliminating competition and driving up costs for fans, artists, and venues. What does that mean for us, the concert goer?
Well, nothing right now, because there's going to be a second trial. This is a New York State case. This is going to be a second trial to determine what the court does after this finding of guilt. The states, there are 39 state attorney generals who brought a lawsuit, including our attorney general here in Illinois, trying to break, basically the ultimate goal would be to break up the monopoly that is Live Nation and Ticketmaster. I don't think that will happen. I think there'll be some remedy short of that. And we can look to the federal case. So just so your listeners understand, there was two cases. There was a case brought by the Department of Justice This is back in the Biden administration, basically after the whole Taylor Swift Eras fiasco, where, you know, millions and millions of people could not get tickets to her show and were faced with incredible fees. Well, the DOJ then went after Ticketmaster and Live Nation, alleging that they formed a monopoly. In addition, the states, many 39 state attorney generals also separately went after Live Nation and Ticketmaster for the same reason, that they're a monopoly. So these two cases were going concurrently. The DOJ at a federal level actually settled their lawsuit last month for a relatively tiny amount of money, something like $266 million, which, you know, Ticketmaster makes, Live Nation Ticketmaster makes probably in just a few days.
Yeah.
But last week, the state case, at least one of the state cases, did come back. The jury came back and found that they were, in fact, a monopoly. In terms of remedies,
hold your thought. We'll talk about remedies. We have some breaking news now. We go live to the newsroom with Dave Schwann.
Thank you, Wendy. We have received word now of the identity of the Chicago police officer that was fatally shot yesterday at Swedish Covenant Hospital. He has been identified by the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office as 38-year-old John Bartholomew. He had worked for the department for 10 years and was shot yesterday with another officer, allegedly by a robbery suspect, arrested that morning. That second officer remains in critical condition. He has not been identified as yet. But Police Superintendent Larry Snelling said he is fighting for his life. We'll have more details on this when it becomes available.
Thank you very much, Dave. We will stay on top of that. And back to you, Rich. It's just, we don't want people to tune away when breaking news happens, so we've got you covered here on WGN. And all right, so getting back to this Live Nation and Ticketmaster lawsuit. Where did we leave off, Rich?
So you were asking, and of course, best wishes to that officer.
Yes.
You were asking what happens to consumers, which is really what we all care about, right?
Yes.
I mean, I pay ticket prices just like everyone. And for consumers, one thing that at the federal level, the settlement did now allow for is other competitors to have access to the market. So whereas in the past, it would be an exclusive deal between Live Nation venues and Ticketmaster, that's really one of the key allegations of the monopoly. Now, other companies like SeatGeek, StubHub, these other companies can compete with Ticketmaster, which should result in some, you know, competition, which should decrease prices, number one. Number two, in the state case, there will be an agreement to sell off some of the amphitheaters. One of the main allegations is that Live Nation, which owns many theaters in addition to producing shows and selling tickets, they also own venues, including amphitheaters. And amphitheaters in particular, there's only so many of those in the country. So it was ordered at the federal level for Live Nation to sell off some of those, again, to increase competition. So there could be some reduction of fees, but I wouldn't expect suddenly for all these fees to go away.
And don't some of the artists set their own prices on this as well?
Well, that's exactly true. That's ultimately, I mean, you know, if your listeners want to get mad at anyone,
yeah,
I would suggest that, unfortunately, it's not Live Nation and Ticketmaster. They are simply serving the interests of the artists. If you really want to get to the core of this issue and why ticket prices are so high, it's because of the artists. Ultimately, the artists are setting the prices. Now, understand that, you know, every ticket that's sold, that gets chopped up into, you know, 30 or 40 different buckets. I mean, the artist gets a piece, the venues get a piece, all expenses have to be paid, etc. But artists are responsible ultimately for these fees. If Taylor Swift or Springsteen or Harry Styles, if they wanted to reduce prices, they could do that tomorrow and they could charge less. But, you know, after COVID, we all saw a huge increase in the demand for live events. And that's what the market has now. These prices are what the market has now generated.
I don't know if you've heard the new Paul McCartney song yet that has been out there. It's sweet. It's, you know, it's Paul being Paul. But then I think of all the money he charges for his tickets. I mean, you know, they could really do something about it. I can't believe how expensive concerts are. We were talking earlier, Eli from our sports lounge, Eli Burke, went to see Luke Combs. I'm like, triple digits for tickets? Yes, but in the low triple digits. That's outrageous. It really kind of is. What do I do? Who do I call?
Again, there's no question that the prices are more than they've ever been. And,
yeah.
You know, you have to just look to the artist. They could literally reduce all that tomorrow, but it's a supply and demand issue, and the demand is high and the supply is very low.
Yeah, I guess. All right. In other entertainment news, Bill Maher is in the news. Tell us about this lawsuit that was going on. There was a defamation joke about Bill Maher, right?
Yeah, Laura Loomer, who is part of the MAGA universe, a friend of Trump's, very right-wing extremist, activist, she sued Bill Maher and HBO for statements he made about her. Basically, he joked that she was sleeping with President Trump. That case was dismissed, and it was found that there was no he alleged defamation, of course, and it was found that because she is a public figure, the standard by which she has to prove defamation is higher than the average person. And
yeah.
That standard, as we've covered before, is something called actual malice. That's a really big hurdle for public figures because you have to show that the intent of the person, in this case, Bill Maher, who uttered the allegedly defamatory statement, was he knew that it was false and he said it anyway. And basically the court said, this is a joke, right? This is just a joke. He's a comedian. He makes lots of jokes all the time. And basically you have to have a tougher skin if you're Laura Loomer.
Yeah, it's really interesting now to watch stand-up comics. Some don't care and do whatever they want, but, they're jokes. What is the actual legal problem with making fun of someone? I mean, if it's a public figure, you can do it, can't you?
Well, correct. And you actually touched on the second really important takeaway. It was found that she didn't really suffer any damages, right?
Okay.
Any case has two elements, liability and damages. And even if she proved that there was liability, there really was no damages, right? She continues to this day to be a friend of the president. She continues to get, money, presumably from that association. In fact, you could argue that this joke made her even more famous. Therefore, she's able to capitalize more on it. So that damages part, even when plaintiffs in defamation cases prove liability, that's often where their cases fail.
All right, and I think we have time to get in one more story. I have to hurry because I'm going to go grab a cocktail with Kash Patel. What do you have? What do you have for us here?
Well, he's suing. He is not shy, nor is any member of the Trump administration shy about suing media outlets. We saw that very successfully with the president. He's got lots of money, but Kash Patel, who's the FBI director, has sued The Atlantic magazine because they have a report alleging that basically he's been drinking on the job. They cited several sources showing that he is in fact, as FBI director, showing up, missing meetings, slipping in, etc. He immediately, almost, the day after the story came out, he filed a $250 million defamation lawsuit against this magazine. And the argument is the same, basically that he's been defamed. Again, the standard for him, even more than Laura Loomer, is that he is a public figure. He will have to show that she had actual malice when she made these statements. And, she's obviously much more credentialed, presumably, than Bill Maher, who just made a joke. I would assume that given her multiple sources, that she vetted all of them and wouldn't just make these statements. I think that lawsuit's going nowhere.
All right. I have another one I want to throw at you. I can't remember the name of the documentary about Michael Jackson that was on HBO, Finding Neverland or something.
Leaving Neverland, yeah, Leaving Neverland.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I watched that and, I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. I just know that there are some actors that have been hanging out with Michael Jackson since they were little. For instance, Macaulay Culkin. Corey Feldman has no problem alleging things in the news with other people. I don't know what happened. I'm not saying Michael Jackson was a normal person. You shouldn't cuddle with kids. I don't know what else happened, but this Leaving Neverland, I had heard that it's been removed from HBO and not available now. And the two people that were accusing Michael Jackson of abuse, has their court date happened? Do you know about that at all?
No, I mean, that's, you know, that documentary came out something like, I believe, 15 years ago or something,
yeah,
maybe even longer. And I know there was defamation lawsuits that were, I think it was like Michael Jackson fan clubs that actually sued these two for defamation. I think that went nowhere. In terms of, I believe also they had sued HBO at the time. This is back maybe even longer than 15 years ago,
yeah,
20 years ago, alleging that they had violated a non-disparagement contract, if I remember. Again, I think that all went nowhere. Maybe there was a settlement of one of them. But, yeah, it's all being, you know, brought back now because of the Michael movie. That's, I guess, whitewashed most of it, right? I mean, it doesn't discuss any of it.
We are going to talk to one of our news anchors here from WGN. Ron Brown's going to give us a little review in about an hour. He saw the movie. Listen, you can't argue with the fact that Michael Jackson was an incredible entertainer. Again, I don't know what happened, and I'm not saying anything either way, but yes, the family was behind this movie, and it is not mentioned at all, which I find weird, don't you?
Yeah, I think I read that, you know, in one version of it, they did deal with it, but in this current version, they cut most of it out. I guess Antoine Foucault, the director, did film so much footage that there might be a sequel, so perhaps they'll deal with it then. Listen, it all depends on how well the movie does. If it makes a lot of money, then the director's take on this will be, you know, will be reinforced.
Yeah.
If, however, people reject it and say, listen, this is not the whole story, then Hollywood is based on box office, so we'll see how that works.
That's a sad tale of woe that it's based on box office success. What do you have coming up on Legal Face Off, your podcast on WGNRadio.com?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking. We just taped an episode on Friday, so it'll be released tomorrow. We are covering lots of great stories, including this bear, these three people who dressed as a bear in California to rip up a car. Did you see this video? It went viral.
No.
These three idiots. Yeah, there was an insurance scam in California where they were alleging that a bear got into their car and ripped it up. Of course, Ring videos show that they were dressed as a bear and got into the car themselves and were clawing it up. Yeah, interesting.
Rich,
interesting
do people though. Really think they're going to get away with this?
You know, with cameras now, thank God that we've got some great footage of all this stuff because it's great for our show. But yeah. Yeah, you wonder what people are thinking when they get into a bear costume and tear up a car. How much could that be worth? I can't imagine the value of that insurance claim that it's worth it.
Yeah, I don't have any idea. All right, well, you can find that on WGNRadio.com. You can find Rich Lankoff, let's say it correctly, at a Bruce show. What, Wednesday it's happening?
Wednesday night. We'll see you there right on the front.
Have him touch your hand. Have him come down and dance with you or something. That'll be your next mission.
Sounds great. We'll put that video right up on WGN, of course.
Rich, thank you for taking the time. Always a pleasure. I appreciate it. Talk to you. Rich Lankoff, Chicago-based entertainment attorney and co-host of Legal Face Off, right here, WGN Radio. We are going to talk a little planty things, indoor and outdoor plants. I have both. I have been cleaning up the yard, getting ready to plant some perennials. We are going to talk to the horticulturist at Vern Goer's Greenhouse. If you have any questions, which every week you guys do, 312-981-7200. You can call us. You can text us if you don't want to go on the air. And we will get to your questions about indoor and outdoor plants coming up. And Dave Schwann's news is coming up next here on 720 WGN. I love John Denver. I love growing things. It's Wendy Snyder here with you. And Dan Costa is here, the horticulturist over at Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale, Illinois. Thank you for joining us again, Dan.
Oh, good morning, Wendy. Always good to talk to you.
You as well. And I kind of mix and match my garden segment here. We have the Chicago Tomato Man, who's on every once in a while, and you can order tomatoes through his website, or you can get them at Vern Goer's Greenhouse.
And we get a lot of them.
You do. And then I get some of my veggies at Vern Goer's, and I definitely get a lot of my perennials there. So we will be talking about that. First and foremost, I just want to let you know, and you probably know this, that I don't wear gloves when I garden, and I did realize that dirt is nature's original stress buster. There's beneficial bacteria, and exposure to this is kind of like a natural antidepressant. It helps you produce serotonin in your brain. Now, I'm assuming you knew this.
Oh, yeah. And what you were talking about this morning with the doctor about immunity, your immune system. I've been playing in the dirt since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And I've truly, honestly, very rarely get sick.
Well, that's
everybody
good.
Around me at work gets sick, and I'm just there.
Yeah. Well, that is true. And you need to boost your immunity and just go ahead and dig in the dirt. That's what we like to say. 630 has texted in before we even got you on the line, Dan. We love Vern Goer's. Went there yesterday to prepare our hummingbirds coming to town. Dan and the crew were very patient and awesome with us. We always leave Vern Goer's with a great feeling. Tell us about some hummingbird plants. Are there certain perennials or shrubs or bushes that attract the hummingbirds?
Well, hummingbirds like tubular-shaped flowers. So flowers like petunias or Gartenmeister fuchsias, salvias, anything that has a tubular-shaped flower is what they will go to, because they don't land to drink the nectar. They're still in flight. And so if they can just stick their bill down inside of the flower, they can access the nectar that's in the bottom of the flower. Other things like butterflies and that, they need a landing place, but hummingbirds do not. So anything tubular, they just love it.
They are so cool. It's like they're just stuck, you know, when they're hovering. It's pretty amazing. And I know that you have butterfly bush. Does that really attract the butterfly?
Yeah, it does. Last summer, I had a customer ask me that question while we were standing there by the butterfly bushes. And almost on cue, a yellow tiger swallowtail butterfly came and landed right on one.
That's pretty cool.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that certainly does. We have another texter. Somebody was, this stinks. 630, my spring cleanup service trimmed our hydrangeas down to 4 to 6 inches. Will they be okay? Now, I know without seeing them, Dan, you don't know, because different hydrangeas have different things, right?
If they are white flowering ones, then this won't be a problem. They'll just be shorter, and actually, they might actually become bushier, fuller. So it might not be that bad. Four inches is pretty short. I'd stay about 8 to 10, maybe 12 inches. That's what I trim mine to. But if there are blue or pink flowered ones, then you definitely are going to lose the spring bloom. And maybe if they're like a endless summer, they might not also bloom during the summertime. But white ones will recover. That's pretty short. It'll take a long time.
Now, I get confused with the blooming on old wood and new wood, because I have Annabelle hydrangeas. I took a picture and texted it to you. I cut, I just basically deadheaded the dead flowers. I leave them for winter because I like how that looks. And I can see green coming up on old wood and new wood. Is that possible? Can it be both?
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah, they're coming out of dormancy now and starting to leaf out, getting ready for the season. And the easiest thing to remember is just the flower color. If it's white, it'll bloom on new wood. If it's pink or blue, it blooms on old wood. So the pink or blue ones, you got to be very careful. Don't prune those in the fall at all.
white ones, you can prune those in the fall or the spring, although it's better to do it in the spring.
All right, and you had told me, I'm pretty sure you had told me, that to shape my, I have like three Annabelle hydrangeas in front of our house, mm-hmm. and I kind of trim them so I leave it taller in the center and then kind of trim it a little like a snowball, like a giant snowball, basically.
Yeah.
Is that
mm-hmm.
a good way to do it where it's, you know?
Yeah. I don't like to trim them all at the same height.
Yeah.
Just like you said, I trim the center ones a little higher and the outer ones a little lower. And it just gives it a nicer shaping that way. If you trim them all the same height, then they're going to be more, they're going to grow to the same height. And it's not going to look as nice.
All right. 312-981-7200. I don't know if Dave Schwann is in the newsroom, but I know that he had a question for you. So as soon as he gets there, he will ask it. In the meantime, he's here right now. All right. Schwanny, you had a question. You told me earlier this morning
you wanted to ask. It's quite simple, actually. Mm-hmm. I have some indoor plants at home and really not sure how often to water them or how, you know, infrequently to water them. What might be just a good basic rule of thumb to keep them properly moisturized?
Well, you want to touch the soil before you water and see if it feels moist. If it feels moist, they're fine. If it feels dry, give them a real good soak. I use lukewarm water. And most of the time, the soil should feel like if you took a dish sponge, wet it, and then wrung it out real good, so it just feels damp to your touch. That's how the soil should feel most of the time. It depends on the plant, though. Some plants want water more often. Some plants want water less often.
Yeah. And lukewarm water, you say?
Yeah, because it will absorb. The peat moss that's in the soil mix, when it gets dry, it's just like pouring water on a duck. It'll just roll right off.
Yeah.
But lukewarm water will penetrate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you.
312, how do you get rid of bindweed? Trying to get ahead of it now, if possible. Thank you for the help. Dan, what is bindweed?
Bindweed is a type of a morning glory, and it comes up and twines around everything. There's one variety that has a small white flower. That's the common bindweed. The field bindweed has a bigger white flower. Very, very difficult to get rid of because the rhizome is running deep underground. It's about 4 to 6 feet underground. It just keeps putting up shoots. The best way to control it is to be vigilant. Every time you see a sprout coming out of the ground, take it off as soon as possible. Weed killers may affect it, but it's going to be difficult to get rid of it with a Roundup or anything like that.
I'm pretty sure that's what I have in my yard, and it like adheres itself to. I have a white fringe tree, and mm-hmm. I find it like in the middle of my cherry tree, and I pull a vine, and then it just kind of comes out. Is that probably what that is?
If it's wrapping around it, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably it.
All right. And
it's very pretty, very nasty weed to get rid of.
I also have what looks like, I mean, I guess it's grapes. It's also, I don't know what that is, but it's taken over my shed, and I don't mind it there because the wood on the shed is in bad shape. But I'm noticing that chokes everything else, too. What is that?
Yeah, it's a wild grapevine. That's the, you know, the Concord grape was developed from those wild grapevines. So the grapes are edible, but they do have a big seed in the center. They will climb over everything and anything, and all those little grapes that the birds eat will spread the seeds all over the place.
Oh,
and they'll be coming up more and more.
That's what's happening.
So you kind of got to watch for it.
All right, hold your thought, 312-981-7200. We have a bunch of hydrangea questions because a lot of people have them and there are different types. We'll get to your questions next. If you have one, 312-981-7200. It's almost Sunday afternoon here on 720 WGN. Oh, I love that Ricky Nelson. Wendy Snyder here, along with Dan Acosta, a horticulturist at Vern Goer's Greenhouse, 5620 South Oak in Hinsdale. And, all right, we have Sharon who has a question about leaf curl. Hi, Sharon, this is Dan. How can we help? Or how can Dan help?
Hi. I have an Annabelle hydrangea that has bloomed beautifully for years. It loves the spot it's in. Last year, I noticed 5 or 6 of these pod-looking things that turned out to be a leaf curl worm, I guess, is in the middle of them. I do open them up, and I've seen a worm.
Yeah.
And I took them all off last year, and the plant, and I always cut down my hydrangea in the fall. And yesterday, I went out to look to see how it was growing, and I bet, and it's all coming up nicely, but I bet there were 25 to 30 of these dang leaf curls. That, mm-hmm. How did that happen? I mean,
and how does she get rid of them?
All down to that's what I want to know. That's what I want to know. I just took them all off.
If you trim them back in the fall, make sure you pick up any leaves or sticks or anything that were cut off and get them in the garbage off of your property because there can be overwintering eggs in there. They'll just hatch out in the spring and give you the problem once again. It is the larva of a moth, I believe. I'd have to really look that one up. But it will get in there. They will curl around over, and the leaf is used then like a protection for them. They generally come out later in the evening to feed. You can use a systemic insecticide through the soil. Put down a good amount of it around the base of the soil and water it lightly in. And then that will go into the system of the plant, and then as they're feeding, they will pick up the insecticide. Kind of hard to spray anything on them because they are protected by the rolled-up leaf.
Jeez.
You would have to actually open all those and get the worms, you know, to in order to spray them.
Yeah.
So those systemic crystals or whatever it is, you can spray that. Yeah. That might help. And then when
on the ground.
And when you trim them in the fall, throw all that out. Don't leave it laying there.
Yeah. Anytime you have a diseased plant, when you're trimming it, make sure that all the garbage is gone after you're done.
Good luck to you, Sharon. More hydrangea questions. Everybody has them. Lori, you're calling from Downers Grove. What's up?
Hi, thanks. Hi, thanks for calling. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Dan.
My question is, I had a tree service come out last week, and they, for whatever reason, took it upon themselves to cut down my hydrangea bush. It was rather young, only a couple of years old, and I could see the fresh blooms, the fresh growth, but I asked him, I said, I thought they grow, the fresh flowers grow from the old wood. And he said, no, don't worry about it. They'll grow back. Is that true?
Like I said before, it depends on the flower color. If it was white, then right, it will grow back. Depending on how far they cut it back and everything, it may flower again this summer or it may not. If it's really, really short, then you might not have flowers.
Why are all these people that are doing landscaping cutting down the hydrangeas? I would tell them
question.
Yeah, tell them, clean things up, but leave, leave the hydrangeas.
You have a charge on your bill.
Yeah, I guess.
We'll do you a favor. We'll cut these down for you, and then we'll charge you for the favor.
but
if it was a pink or a blue-flowered one, then definitely they cut off.
They were colored.
Flowers,
yeah. Well, Lori, maybe you should head on over to Vern Goer's and get some new ones and charge your tree trimmers.
That's good advice. I think I'll do that.
You can do that.
Thank you, Lori. I really appreciate it. Here is a question. You're on the road. You're heading to Iowa, John?
I am, Wendy. Came in town to go to a Sox game for my daughter's birthday yesterday, and I'm heading back.
Sweet. All right. I'm a Sox fan, and you have a question. Thank you for listening, by the way. Nice to keep you company while you're driving.
Oh, it's awesome.
You have a Rosa Sharon question?
I've got one I transplanted probably 2 or 3 years ago, I guess, from a cutting, and I had flowers on it last year, and I'm not seeing any signs of life yet this year. Is it going to come around? Is it a late bloomer? Or I've seen no buds yet or anything.
It might not have come out of dormancy yet.
Mine haven't at all. Mine are still looking like nothing's happening yet.
Yeah,
like
they're going to come out a little bit later than some of the other stuff, so I would just watch it and see what happens. They might
be
sleeping in a little later.
Safe travels to you, John. We appreciate it, and go Sox. Larry, you're calling with a rose question. What's going on with you?
Yes, I do. Thanks. Love your show.
Thank you.
There are probably like 40-year-old rose bushes, but they have that typical black spot. What is it, and how can I cure it or get rid of it?
Well, black spot is a disease, and it will infest roses very heavily a lot of times. You can use fungicide on it. I do have a couple of fungicides at the greenhouse that you could apply and to help to keep that at bay. But it is something that you will have to repeat the sprays. You can't just spray it once and then think that you won't have the problem at all. But it is a terrible disease. That's why knockout was bred for the purpose of being resistant to that disease, because most roses are not resistant. They will get it. And it's a terrible thing.
Well, good luck to you, Larry.
All right, thank you. I can get that anywhere, like your place?
Yeah, we got it in stock all the time.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. And we have Marie who is calling us. Hi, Marie. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
You have a question?
I want to know how to get rid of wild garlic, which multiplies tremendously over the winter.
Start eating.
Yeah, I fight it too. It's a very difficult thing, again, to get rid of, because when you spray it with a herbicide, there's a lot of water in the bulb and in the foliage, and it really dilutes the herbicide and makes it much less effective. Unfortunately, the bulbs are small. I've never pulled one that I ever saw that I wanted to even attempt to eat because it's so tiny. I dig it out. That's about the best thing.
Digging it out might be the only way, Marie.
Oh, okay.
I know.
Thank you very much.
Oh, that groan. I know. It was so sweet. All right. We have time for one more call. Diane is calling from New Lenox. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Wendy. How the heck are you?
I'm great. What do you got going on?
All right. I have something that my plant identifier calls striped squill, but I don't know if that's what it is. My backyard is mostly hostas because it's all shade, and this stuff just blew in from someplace, and it's just everywhere among the hostas.
Do you know anything about striped squill?
Does it have a white flower or a blue flower?
Yes. A white flower.
White flower. It's probably Star of Bethlehem.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I have it in my yard. And it blooms, and the bulbs multiply in the soil. They will make clumps of bulbs. And then when the flowers bloom, it makes seeds, spreads around. And again, that's another thing, just like the wild garlic. It's very difficult to kill it with herbicides. And so I go around my yard, and wherever I see a patch of it, I dig it all out, get as many of the little bulbs as I possibly can, and then escort them to the garbage can.
Okay. How deep are the bulbs usually?
Oh, they're pretty shallow, just 2 or 3 inches at most.
Okay. And it's called what? Star of Bethlehem.
Star of Bethlehem.
It's kind of a pretty
name for a crummy plant.
Yeah, well, the Tree of Heaven is also a nice name for an ugly plant. Yeah.
Well, good luck to you, Diane. And Dan, I'm going to ask you, I don't know if you know the answer to this. I have a weed that has taken over my perennial gardens. It's all I can describe is it's green and it has yellow flowers, and when I go to rip up the root, orange is all over my hand. It's like it's bleeding orange blood. Do Do you have any idea what that could be?
Not offhand.
Oh, I stumped you. This is the first time this has happened. I will...
Give me a picture.
Yeah, I will, because it just pops up all over, and when I weed it, you know, you can pull the stem out. They're pretty bushy, and I actually pull the root out, like when you master the dandelion and you get the whole root, and I get really excited about it, and then I look at my hands, and it looks like I've murdered something, and I have orange blood all over my hand.
And maybe... something called hawkweed.
I think that is what it is.
But I don't know if it makes... I don't have any in my yard, so I can't tell you if it makes an orange blood.
Oh, well, I'll give you some. You can put it in, because it's very invasive. pop by to see Dan Costa. I'll be heading over there to get some perennials. It's Vern Goer's Greenhouse, 5620 South Oak. When are you working next?
I work on Monday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
All right. I'll see you this week. I'll pop in and say hi. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. I always enjoy it.
Excellent. We enjoy you. And news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Dave Schwann is now on 720 WGN. Oh, good morning to you. I was just getting into this song. It's Wendy Snyder here. Welcome to a Sunday afternoon. And Neil Fisher is filling in for Eli Burke today. Eli is in the sports lounge. Dave Schwann is here in the newsroom. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to throw this song to you, Neil. What is this lovely song we're hearing? What was that?
Yeah, well, so it was supposed to be We're Number One, the Super Steeler Disco by Larry McGee and the Saxon Sisters, because the NFL draft took place in Pittsburgh this year. And for some reason, whatever played was not that. It was Larry Gatlin, We're Number One.
Of the Gatlin brothers.
Yeah, yeah. So that was not the piece of music that I wanted to play.
Okay, well, now I have to hear the Super Steeler Disco. And so when you find it, I just need to hear a little. Let me hear a little of it.
There we go.
Oh, nice little mixology there.
We got a DJ over here.
See, that's a disco.
Yeah. I'm like, that is...
That's more like it.
All right. This was written after the Steelers won the 1980 Super Bowl.
That's right.
And it's terrible.
I see you dancing in the studio.
Well,
you can't lie.
It's hard not to cheer dance when the beat gets you. All right, so let's talk about the draft. I want to ask about this Dylan Thienemann. Okay. He is a new Bear.
Yeah, he was the Bears' first-round pick this year. It was kind of a weird vibe heading into the draft this season, because we were so used over the last several years of the Bears having a pick inside the top 10.
Yeah.
We knew exactly who they were going to take off the board. It was just a matter about hearing the name called. But heading into this draft, we didn't really know what it was going to be. A lot of the fan base was hoping they were going to help strengthen the defense more and more throughout this draft.
Yeah.
And they took a defensive back to hopefully be part of this new young core on the defensive side of the ball.
All right. Now, so I saw the announcement being made. He was excited. It's just really kind of cool. Now, you were with Hampton OB and Andy Mazur yesterday, weren't you?
I was. What a time that was.
Yeah, how was that when everything was going on?
It felt so right to just be back in that football form again, seeing those boys in the studio. OB walked in before we had even started the show. He was already firing it off. We were telling him to save it for the air. He was so excited to get back into it. It was great to see Hamp. They're excited for the Bears after the success of last season, and it's a new time in Chicago football.
All right, and you have a few little backstories to share with us.
Yeah, I was looking at some of these Bears draft picks, some of the guys that were taken in the later rounds, and I wanted to provide some information to the rest of the Bears fans that might not resemble what you see from them on the football field per se, but just helped you know who these new Bears really are. So I'm going to start with Logan Jones, who was the second round pick for the Bears, and they were part of this promotion with Hines, who has deep roots in Pittsburgh, obviously, where the draft was held. They were doing a promotion helping with to just kind of give more individuality to each of the draft picks. They had a promotion called Mr. 57. And that was going to be giving a beautiful red blazer jacket to the 57th overall pick of the draft. The Bears did own that pick this year. So they were using Devin Hester, who himself was a former 57th pick, to model this jacket along with Heinz Ketchup and really put a lot of stock into whoever this 57th pick would be. That would turn out to be Logan Jones, the center from Iowa. And part of this deal now is that he has been giving a lifetime supply of Heinz Ketchup.
Excellent.
So what a way to start his NFL career, even though he might not be able to put it on many hot dogs around this town.
No, but you can put it on the fries. And I'm telling you, the worst thing in the world is when you go in your pantry to grab that extra bottle of ketchup and you realize you don't have one. That is the worst ever you're at home.
It'll never be a problem for him. And it's also a great company to be in, having the same draft spot as Devin Hester.
Yeah.
It could be worse for him. And then there was a lot of attention being put on Jordan Vandenberg. He was the sixth round pick for the Bears, the last pick they made in this draft. He is a native of Johannesburg, South Africa, and he played his college ball at Georgia Tech. When he was playing college football, he bought a laundromat in the Atlanta area to get some passive income to help just have some extra money to fall back on when his football career is over. So I think that's a brilliant move. He's had his dad got him into that, and just being able to create some extra money as a college student by owning a laundromat is brilliant.
That is really smart.
He said, so the first thing, we wanted to look for something that was passive income so I could set up my future, because I plan on playing football till I'm 45, but you never know what can happen in football, so I just want to prepare myself, was his quote.
All right, he's a smart guy. I like that.
I think my dream for a passive income was always to open up a video store, but look where that's gone. So,
are there any video stores anymore?
There's one in Chicago. It's the only one with physical media in Chicago. It's got like 25,000 titles. But other than that, I mean, they're not around anywhere. I worked at Blockbuster. I loved it. I wish it would come back. It was just, what a great experience to walk around on a Friday night, spend an hour trying to pick a cover of a movie box and watch something over the weekend, you know?
I found something. I was cleaning up. I have a lot of junk drawers, I realized. It's not just one. I have a lot. And I have junk cabinets, and I stash things. I'm sorry, I'm a bit of a hoarder. I found a Netflix DVD in the envelope.
Oh, no.
And you know what movie it was? Peter Pan.
Which one?
The original Peter Pan. I was named after that movie. My brother and sister had just watched Peter Pan, and then I guess my mom said, what do you want to name your baby sister? And my brother said, Henrietta. I don't know why. And then they're like, no, what about Wendy? So I came from, every Wendy really came from the Peter Pan movie. So I thought that was significant. And obviously one of my sons wanted to see it, and they have yet to watch it.
You know, is this the animated version or the Mary Martin one? Because I used to watch the Mary Martin one.
I think it's the animated one. I don't know.
Okay, because I remember when I was a kid, Mary Martin, you know, would be flying around.
Yeah.
On the old, it was like a white VHS clamshell.
Yes.
And I used to watch it all the time.
Yeah. And then Sandy Duncan was Peter Pan, too. Why all the women playing Peter Pan?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, they did such a great job. I mean, why stop, you know?
All right. Do you have any other little cute, I love these little backstories here.
I did have one more. It was one that we're still trying to get to the true bottom of this. We found out on day two of the draft. So in the third round, the Bears took a wide receiver, Xavion Thomas, really, really fast, receiver, expect him to be in the return game. But he said in his little like intro press conference for reporters that he was a distant relative of Walter Payton.
Is that true?
Jarrett Payton said he was going to be looking into it more, and Xavion Thomas claims that there is a relation between his grandfather and Walter. I don't know whether it's an actual blood relation just yet, or if it's just like really close, like family friend type of family association, but regardless...
It
you
better be true.
I'm hoping so, but if that's the case, it's a perfect fit here in Chicago.
It is great. If it is not true, then we are all going to be against this dude.
It's funny, Eli. I think you'll be impressed with Wendy. She walked into the studio today and said, how about that Xavion and his 4.28?
I mean, truly incredible speed. Wendy, you had it right on the button.
What are you talking about?
His 40-yard dash time, 4.28, yeah.
That was the big reason why the Bears took him. The Bears were really just going for the freakiest athletes they could find in this draft class, and they really succeeded. Xavion Thomas runs that 40-yard dash in 4.28 seconds. You're not going to see many other guys in this league with that kind of speed.
Well, go Bears. I'm really excited about it, and I heard a second of Hampton OB yesterday, and hearing them back on the air just gets me excited for Bear season. When does that start?
The season starts in early September. And we'll have a schedule release in about 2 or 3 weeks' time. They haven't put an official date on that yet, but around the second week of May is what we're looking at.
All right. You were talking about what was freaky. Can I talk to you about a sports story that's kind of freaky?
Of course.
My son Dylan is not that into sports at all. And he said, did you hear about the New England Patriots coach? And I'm like, no, what are you talking about? Well, this coach, and he showed me a video of, I don't know, this YouTuber Penguin or something. And, he explained it all. I'm sure you're aware of this. This is, freaky and weird and getting weirder by the minute. New England Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel has been exposed, right? Could I say that?
There have been pictures that have been released of him in an intimate setting with an NFL insider reporter, which obviously raises a lot of concerns about the integrity of journalism and keeping like insider secrets moving back and forth between teams, as this reporter is also continuing to create news on the team, especially that involve the Patriots. This has been a story now for about a month, ever since just after the NFL coaches meetings happened in late March out in Arizona. They were spotted at a couples retreat in Sedona. And there's just a lot of conflicting stories. There's not a lot of like hard set information based on like outside of the pictures that have been put out. And recently there were more pictures that were released that shown that they had a relationship dating back as far as 6 years.
Okay, you guys, this isn't really right. This is former NFL reporter Diana Russini. He's head coach.
Mike Vrabel is the current head coach of the New England Patriots. They are both married to other people.
Yes.
And Vrabel told reporters earlier this week that he was going to be stepping aside for day three of the draft, which was yesterday. He was going to be leaving the team and seeking counseling. But then it was revealed after that the Patriots were still in constant communication with him throughout the draft yesterday.
This is just an interesting situation to follow because, you know, many times when you have a contract, if you make the company you work for look bad in any way, shape, or form, they can dump you. I mean, and this is not good. I saw a video where she was talking about, you know, my husband's kind of a normie. He's pretty normal, so I don't post pictures of him, but I do post pictures of Vrabel. There's like a lot of incriminating stuff out there that it seems like they don't even care that it's out there. Is this a correct assumption? Because this is really weird.
In the wake of a story like this, social media is going to erupt in a way that we have seen it do time and time again, where people are going to have people are going to be posting memes and jokes and more podcast clips like the one you're seeing. But a lot of these are also taken with zero context in mind. I'm not saying that she's fully off the hook for anything she's saying, but like, there is context missing in all those podcast clips. A lot of them, they were like joking around, but still, it does add up because it's not just one or two podcast clips.
All right. And her deal was, who did she work for? And she doesn't anymore.
It was previously with ESPN and then was with The Athletic and resigned last week.
When this all kind of came out?
Yes. And then it was earlier this week, I believe she deleted her social media accounts.
Things not happening to a football team or organization, most people would get fired after things like this. The Patriots kind of have a long history of scandal, whether it's Deflategate or Spygate.
Mm-hmm.
Even their owner, Robert Kraft, with the massage parlors. I mean, nothing really happened there either. So they are one of the favored son organizations, I suppose, with Roger Goodell. But maybe that's why nothing's happening.
Yeah, there's been a lot of angles about, like, what's the fallout? Why aren't more people talking about the story to begin with? So It's really messy, freaky was the way we described it earlier, and I think that's still an appropriate descriptor.
And then I've been seeing some... Now, first of all, I didn't know who either of these two people were, and I didn't really care. And Tom Brady's a cheater. I'll just throw it out there, because those are my feelings. Yeah, he may be a good football player, but I don't know. But now I can't get enough information about this because now I've read that Mike Vrabel refuses to apologize to his family in press conferences. Does he have kids? That I didn't know.
He does, I believe. he said he was going to be stepping away from the team to be seeking counseling and be with his family. He said time and time again, and all the times he has spoken to reporters, that family comes before football. He's going to do what he can to right this. He has acknowledged that his actions are not to the standard that he sets for himself, but that's really the only accountability we've seen so far in the situation.
I am just, I don't know why I'm so shocked and appalled at this behavior. I guess because maybe hide it better. I don't know. They didn't seem to care. I guess that's what's bothering me.
There was a lot of information that people were able to publish pretty easily, which was probably the most concerning part about, like, how you're two pretty prominent people in the football world. How do you not at least try to cover your tracks a little bit?
And yeah, I think a lot of it too was, you know, these weren't necessarily like private investigators taking these photos. We're sort of in the new age of people with their cell phones taking these photos, sending them to websites or posting on social media. And that's how some of these stories break now. It's not just you're investigating someone else. It's just a regular person taking your picture at a bar.
Yeah, people are noticing, they're recognizing Coach Vrabel out in public, taking pictures of him and not noticing that there's also a reporter in those pictures too. They're noticing her after the fact, after this has already become a story now. So that's why we're seeing these pictures from 2020 and 2024. And now it's just really adding up big time.
I just am going to follow this now. I mean, to me, I feel, all right, he's stepping away to get counseling. I hope that's true. It's just an easy thing to say, right? To just go, oh, yeah, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to get counseling.
Yeah, to me, it's very much I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
Well, there's that running joke, too, of celebrities when they get in trouble. Now it's like they're going to have that Notes app post because they can't post as, you know, so many characters on Twitter. So you see the Notes app and then they have the long PR written.
Probably written by ChatGPT.
Yeah. I don't know why I even care that much, but I just I feel so sorry for her husband. And then there was speculation that her baby is named Michael. And was it named after him? I don't know. Michael, if you look at lists, I have a Michael. It's the most common name that people name babies. So
yeah, that's not what I'm really subscribing to myself, that particular one.
I just couldn't believe it. And I'm wondering if the Patriots are going to... I don't know. Don't they have to let him go? Isn't this bad pub for them?
Well, he just took him to the Super Bowl, and I'm assuming they're going to do everything they can to keep him there, right? Wouldn't you say, Eli?
They're definitely going to fight to just keep him around. They've already come out in support of Vrabel getting the right treatment, making sure things are right with his family. So they're treating it like it's a personal issue. So once he can clear up his personal problem, then they can continue his business forward. I don't know if that's the best move for them, but that's the move they decided to make.
And it is a personal thing. I mean, it hasn't affected his job, or has it? I don't know. It's weird that she was an NFL... was she like a sideline reporter? Or
she was like an insider reporter, like someone who you will do... not necessarily during the games you'll see on TV, but writing those big stories throughout the week about a player's injury or if there's any major headlines... she'll be one of the first to break that type of news.
That is interesting. All right. Well, I knew nothing about these people. I don't know. I think they say even negative publicity is good. Just get your name out there. I don't think in this case. And I don't want to see her husband. I just feel so bad for him and her kid.
Yeah, I'm just hoping everybody gets the help they need in a situation like this, and that we can hopefully move past it at some point.
Although the help they need, they're a cheater. I don't know.
Right.
And 847, two adults in questionable relationships, no one's business. I know, but it has become our business because they're not keeping it private. They were keeping it public. Does that seem fair? Doesn't need to apologize publicly to family. Private apology, yes. Public apology, no. 708. You have said it best. Bad behavior usually gets a pass when you win. And words to live by. That's all I'll say.
Yep.
And bad behavior, I don't know. Michael Jackson. I'm just bringing this up because I don't know what happened, but I know there's a new movie out. And is it wrong that I want to see it? I don't know. I never go to theater, so I'll wait till it's streaming or something. But we will check in with Ron Brown and talk to him about that movie because he saw it. And we have Schwanee's news coming your way next. Eli, thank you for that, all that information. I'm anxious to see what happens.
Happy to be here. See you next week.
All right. News coming your way next here on 720 WGN. Jan. Honestly, every song I hear of Michael Jackson's is, he did so many different and unique things. And, of course, there's a movie that opened, and we all know I don't go to the movie theaters that often. That's where Ron Brown comes in, our WGN radio news anchor.
Hi, Wendy.
Hello, Ron. No doubt to his talent whatsoever.
And that's what this movie reportedly is all about. It's just a celebration of his talent. It's not much of a movie. It's just a celebration of his talents. From what I understand, I'll be seeing it this week and doing a review on Thursday. No, what I've been reading is like one of the critics from RogerEbert.com, Robert Daniels, says this is a filmed playlist in search of a story. So I'm going in with that expectation. And sometimes that's okay if that's all it intended to be. There are stories also that they had a whole different movie in mind, a third act, that included the allegations against Michael, and they had to reshoot it after the family objected.
So the family is behind this, correct?
They are, yes.
Yeah, obviously, because his nephew plays the part of Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Is that Jermaine's kid?
It is. So, you know, it's a family sanctioned movie, and they didn't like the I don't know how it got to the point where they already filmed it, but they filmed it after the script and they objected to it, so they changed $15 million in reshoots. So it makes it a little different. Now, I'm not saying that you know, maybe that made it a better movie from a fan perspective who don't want to be, you know, they just want to celebrate the music. They want to celebrate you know, the dancing. They want to celebrate what they would like to cherish about Michael Jackson. And he has, like you said, one of the greatest talents of our generation. So there's really nothing wrong with that. It's just when you try to put the two together and say, you know, this is a movie about his life, it's really a celebration of his music.
But when you see a biopic, I don't know, I think you like to have all issues discussed. I know I do. Like, I watched that Chevy Chase one, mm-hmm. and he's a jerk, and he pretty much admitted he's a jerk.
Everyone who knew him pretty much admitted that he was a jerk.
And
yeah.
And there was, you know, there were some bad things in there that made him look bad, and he claimed it and whatever. I know Michael is not around to do that. And listen, I'm not defending him, but I really just don't know what happened.
Right. And like I said, the fans don't seem to matter. It did the best box office of any music biopic in history.
Really?
Opening at $97 million. So that's, like I said, it's, if that's what they were aiming for and you know what it is going in, then that's all you can expect.
$97 million, and you said they had to reshoot things and were like $15 million in the hole to begin with, right?
Right. So, and they've got a big name director who's doing it. It's not a small budget film. So it's a major motion picture, and it looks like they might have made the right decisions. The audience scores differ wildly from the critics. The audience are saying they love it. So that's what they were looking for.
708 says, I saw the MJ movie, was done well. It's good. They left out his deep problems. The young man who played him is his nephew. He's an MJ double. I have heard great things about that.
Yeah, from the trailer, you can tell. It's like, this looks exciting. He's doing very, very good at it. So, you know, in imitating Michael Jackson. But I think a 38% positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes, you don't always have to go by that, but it's an indication of what to expect going in. It's a, like they said, a filmed playlist in search of a story, perhaps.
815, I saw the Michael Jackson movie. Storyline revolves around how mean his father was, which we all knew that before. I just, all right. And the family didn't object. There were legal issues, according to the accusers, keeping their identities hidden. So that's why it had to be reshot.
And Janet Jackson is not mentioned at all in this, because she didn't want to be included. She saw the early script and she said, I'm not going to be a part of this. But she still supports her nephew, Jafar Jackson, who plays Michael in the film. So there's a lot going on there. I think my take on it is, if you're a big Michael Jackson fan, you're going to enjoy it no matter what. If you're just looking for, you know, an honest portrayal of the character of Michael Jackson, you know, you got to look elsewhere.
Yeah, you're not going to get it from that.
But I have some other movie news if you have time.
Yes, I do.
Miami Vice, are you a fan?
Always was. I'm telling you right now, Stubbs and Crockett were the two coolest dudes ever.
Well, yeah.
The originals.
Yeah, they're making a comeback. Austin Butler and Michael B. Jordan are going to take over the roles to play Tubbs and Crockett.
That is some great casting there.
That is. It's going to be called Miami Vice 85. Remember, they did another version of Miami Vice, the movie version, that was not very well received with Jamie Foxx and Colin Farrell a couple of years ago in 2006. That was a Michael Mann movie. Michael Mann is from Chicago, a graduate of Amundsen High School, and he's not going to be the director on this one. It's going to be somebody else, Joseph Kosinski, and his resume includes Top Gun, Maverick, and F1, the Brad Pitt car racing movie. So I think we can expect a little bit of action on Miami Vice 85.
Yeah.
And also, I know that May 4th is coming up. Were you aware of that?
Yes. All right. I just want to say, full disclosure, I'm married to a nerd.
A nerd.
Jimmy Mack is, he does a podcast called Rebel Force Radio. He's been doing this podcast almost 20 years now. And yeah, May the 4th be with you.
Yeah. So he may be aware of this as well. So there's going to be a free fan screening of 25 minutes from the upcoming Mandalorian and Grogu film in select IMAX theaters in the Chicago area. That's AMC Roosevelt 16, Cinemark 16 in Woodridge, and City North 14 in Chicago. But here's the bad news, Wendy. All of those free tickets are gone already.
Well, Jimmy Mack has purchased four tickets for all of us to go, and I don't know how to tell him I don't think I want to go see the movie. I mean,
is that for the free fan screening, or is
no,
that when the movie
this
opens?
Is, when the movie opens, I think on a Thursday night, he wants to be able to see it before everybody else sees it. There was a special screening, and that's great.
Yeah, and you don't want to go. Are you breaking the news to him right now?
I don't know. We were going to go as a family, but, you know, then I find out that Tom Kenny, who played SpongeBob, is going to be playing a show that night, and I may want to go see that. Uh-oh. I don't know. I don't know. But, yeah, listen, I have to tell you, Star Wars fans are something else. I've seen each and every movie, and I appreciate it and enjoy it. But I don't need to keep watching it.
Well,
you know?
Have you seen The Mandalorian and the Grogu, the TV show that was on Apple TV?
Yeah, I really have, and it was really good.
That it was. Because I'm like you. I'm not a fanboy, but I appreciate when they do it well, and when they don't, I go, well, that's just not my cup of tea. But this Mandalorian was done very, very well.
It really was. And what's great is you don't have to know all the lore to get into these new spin-off type things.
I hate to watch a movie where I have to do homework.
Yeah, you know? I'm with you.
It's like, just entertain me. Tell me the story, and, you know, be a standalone story.
Yeah.
And I think this Mandalorian was. I was surprised at the TV series that I enjoyed it as much.
And that's what the deal is now, you know, instead of a new season, it's a movie. Is that what it is?
I don't know that they have any plans, for another season. So it may be more profitable to make it as a movie. But, you know, the season, the TV show, it was produced with such, you know, great special effects and such great writing that it was like movie value production.
It was.
In each one of those series. It was like, wow. That and there was another Star Wars on Apple TV. Andor, wasn't it called?
Yeah, I'm not quite finished with that, but I was enjoying that as well,
too. Yeah, very good. And again, you know, full disclosure, I'm not a Star Wars fanboy, so I'm not speaking from my heart here. This is just like, oh, I'm an outsider looking in and saying, well, that's good. And it is. And so I'm looking forward to seeing this Mandalorian on the 22nd. Maybe I'll take your ticket and you can stay home. We'll work something out with Jimmy Mack.
Oh, we'll see. Hey, Karen, you're calling. Are you going to go see the new Mandalorian movie?
No, I was 14 and I fell asleep in the first one with my two little brothers and my dad. It was like this big thing, and it's the only movie I've ever fallen asleep in.
Oh.
I just totally don't get it. Am I the only one that doesn't understand that?
The Star Wars? The first Star Wars
There's
movie?
There's nothing really to understand. It's just...
Any of it. I just don't... I guess...
Maybe you were too little.
Yeah, it gets in the weeds later on.
Yeah.
But the first one was just an action movie, like an old-fashioned action movie that was updated to include space.
It was because they weren't human beings. Like, I couldn't figure out what this figure was and that figure was.
Well, yeah. Some of the droids and, you know, was the cantina scene in the first one? Because that was, that's my favorite scene of all time. So, all right. Well, thank you so much, Karen, for calling. And thank you, Ron Brown, for getting us up to date on some of the movie news out there.
You are welcome.
And I'm going to do a little music segment because we lost someone a few days ago and I haven't been on the air since. And I want to do a little tribute. And that's coming up next here on 720 WGN. I suppose I should talk now. Otherwise, I'm going to let the song play out because it's so beautiful. Dave Mason, Rock and Roll Hall legend, Traffic co-founder, has passed away, and that is just such a beautiful solo tune that he did. Absolutely love that song, We Just Disagree. I learned so much information as I was reading one of his obituaries. He was great in Traffic. He lived a remarkable life devoted to the music and people he loved. In 2024, Dave Mason postponed a tour. He had a serious heart condition that was discovered during just a routine medical checkup. And in 2025, Dave Mason canceled all of his tour dates. His health problems persisted. He said, you know, recovery is a long road. My love for you all runs deep. He wrote it on Instagram at the time. He did fabulous guitar work with Traffic. He also played with Jimi Hendrix, Paul McCartney, the Rolling Stones, Fleetwood Mac, and something I did not know. He actually wrote this song. He wrote it. This is someone else performing it. No, that is not John Belushi. That is Joe Cocker and Feeling All Right. And I did not know Dave Mason wrote that song. I know that Traffic does a version of that song. This was from 1969, and he wrote it, he wrote Feeling All Right, and there's a question mark at the end of that song title. Did anybody know that? Because I didn't really know that.
No, I didn't realize
that. Okay, good.
It sounded like a statement to
me. Exactly. All right, I feel better now. Dave Mason said he never realized how integral a question mark would be to his songwriting history. Dave Mason lamented that most people overlook the nuance of the question mark at the end of that song title because his intention was to legitimately inquire about the emotional state of the listener. Are you feeling all right? I had no idea. Among the song's numerous covers, Cocker's version emerged a year after Dave Mason was unceremoniously fired from Traffic for reasons he said in his book he's still unclear about. And Cocker injected that song with a feel-good vibe, turned its title into a statement rather than a query, and produced an eternal bar jam. So Dave Mason said, I wrote that song 58 years ago. It's as current as it was when I wrote it. I have to thank Joe Cocker for that. The author is sometimes not the best interpreter of the work.
Yeah, Joe Cocker made that his own.
That's,
you know.
Totally. Jimmy wants to jump in on the conversation here. I was so saddened to hear about the passing of Dave Mason. Jimmy, your thoughts on this?
Oh, yeah. Dave Mason was awesome. And a matter of fact, that song, if you ever saw that song live, anybody do it, it's one of the best songs you'd ever see live. And I guess, I think it was on that's posted that like 25 other artists all did that song and they all loved it. And needless to say how great that song is. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it really is. I just didn't know it was a question. And if you do listen to the Traffic version of it, I do hear it more in question form. But yeah, Joe Cocker, all statement.
Oh, yeah, that's what's great about the song. You can interpret that a little differently, and it'll still come out great. But like I said, I got to see that song live by Dave Mason one time, and the crowd went nuts.
Yeah.
And anytime anybody played that song, even at your local establishments, they played it, everybody starts jamming to that song. that is one of the best rock songs to me of all time. It really is.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you for sharing. I appreciate it, Jimmy. And I just was saddened to hear it, and that song we opened with was just a beautiful solo song that he did, and we just disagree. It's just beautiful. And he played on so many people's albums. He played with Fleetwood Mac, with Derek and the Dominoes, and George Harrison as well. So God bless him. And, you know, Dave Mason, very good. We are sad to see you go at the age of 79, which I will tell you is not old enough.
No, that's a great legacy he left.
Yeah.
He had a great resume.
Oh, I love it. His most famous songs was Hole in My Shoe, Feeling All Right, and that Only You Know and I Know is another great song. Mm-hmm. He worked with Cass Elliott, Leon Russell, David Crosby, Graham Nash, Paul McCartney and Wings, The Stones. I mean, really, Michael Jackson. It's all coming full circle here.
Wow.
All right, I am out of here for this week. Ron, thank you for your help today. I appreciate it.
I always enjoy it.
And Neil Fisher, thank you so much. It was fun. I think we're back together next week.
Yeah, I'll be here next week, and I can't wait, so thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right, the best of Steve Dale is coming up next, and so is Ron's news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on 720 WGN.